You better watch out, you gotta keep it tight. Watson's gonna tell you who's naughty or nice. Mr. Watson's going to town. Oh, he loves Ben Wheatley like a fat kid loves cake. You know if it is 2 a.m. some shit's about to break. You better tap out, you might as well quit. Nobody's better than Watson, bitch. Mr. Watson's going downtown. I'd like to introduce to you the man that makes Christmas on blue. I'm talking about that chocolate starfish. I'm talking about that Mr. Watson. It's Limp Bizkit, baby!
Merry Christmas, Watson.
Merry Christmas, cut to the chase. Oh my God, I am... tears are streaming down my face. I have the dumbest looking smile on my face right now. That was amazing. Your show, you guys are starting to do the most engaging and interesting and funnest intros like in the community. It's so awesome. Thanks for having me here. I'm ecstatic.
Oh, thank you for coming on, man. Yeah, I feel like I can't ever start a show with "Welcome to Cut to the Chase."
No. Okay, so yeah, that's kind of the running joke is because when I first started co-hosting with Dan, he would do the same intro every time. He's like, "And welcome back to another episode of Cut to the Chase." I'm like, "That is so lame."
Basic.
I was like, "We need to do fun things."
She's like,
"You're
so basic."
Yeah. So
basic.
So I mean, it kind of started with you know, the Leprechaun episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Of when we did our rhymes and gimmicks.
Which Mr. Watson joined us on and killed it, by the way.
Yes.
that was fantastic. Oh, man. And that was the last time I podcasted with you guys.
Yes.
It was back in March and before a lot of stuff. And
right.
So, yeah, man, I'm having a good night tonight. I had an early day off work. And so I've just been chilling, editing, you know, my podcast, you know, the Watsy Party Horror Show, sipping some low carb keto friendly white Russians and just now talking with my buddies.
Yes.
What could be better on a Wednesday night, you know?
Absolutely. Now, how was the editing going, sir? Can you tell us a little bit about the episode?
Yes, I sure can. It is episode 16 of the Watsy Party Horror Show, and we'll be covering Late Phases.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
2014. So cool. Late Phases 2014, the werewolf, modern werewolf classic, I would say.
Nice, dude. Yeah, I've never seen that one. Oh, wow.
Oh, bro, you got to – Lacey, have you seen Late Phases?
No,
she hasn't either.
Do you enjoy werewolf movies?
Yes, she does.
Oh.
She loves Silver Bullet.
I like Cursed. I know people.
Cursed is amazing.
I know people
cool,
like
Cursed. If I remember correctly.
But, like, I'm a big Joshua Jackson fan, so anything with him, like.
Christina Ricci.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, brother.
Yeah, man. That's awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for joining us for the 12 Days of Chase, Mr. Watson. I feel like it wouldn't be a Christmas show without you, sir. So.
No. Well, we do still have some fun to be had. For each of these episodes, we have a few little segments for everybody. So we'll start with your first segment, which this one is entitled The Wonderful Winter World of Watson.
Love that alliteration.
Right? That's like a tongue twister. Say it three times fast. The Wonder Winter Wonder World. No.
Wacky Wizard Waldo.
The Wonderful Winter World of Watson. There,
ooh,
I did it fast.
That was hot.
If I did that, it'd sound like I was motorboating Jennifer Aniston's ass. I just like,
yo!
Yeah, call back to the Leprechaun shows. Lacey Lou represents.
Damn.
All right, now try to say it like you're motorboating Jennifer Aniston's ass.
What was it? Wonderful Watson. What was it again? Wonderful,
Winter World of Watson.
Wonderful Winter. Oh, the Wonderful Winterful World of Watson. Full.
He goes,
yeah. Ho, ho, ho.
All
yes,
right.
She is.
And I have a couple questions here for you. All right, Watson.
Okay, can't wait.
Did you ever attend an ugly sweater party? And if so, what was the best ugly sweater that you had?
So every single ugly sweater party I have ever been in, I bring the same sweater, and because it's not the same people. You know,
right.
So it's not like I'm repeating, you know, audiences that are like, oh, this sweater again. And it wins every damn time because I got it from like years back, like in 2000. I don't have my personal Facebook page anymore. It used to be on there, and it's the ugliest sweater I got from like the women's section of a of a Value Village or a Goodwill. And it has bells on it. It is disgusting looking sweater. It's green and it has a Christmas tree on it with like actual like little ornaments. It's just hideous, not fashionable. Yeah, and it's won me a contest every single time I've entered it. So yes, yeah,
that is amazing.
I do have it.
All right, you're gonna have to take a photo of it.
I will. Yeah.
Now I just bought a Christmas ugly sweater last year, and the sweater is of a melting snowman, and it says, "I'm having a fucking meltdown."
That's great.
I think that's what it says.
Is that exactly what it says? And then it stayed in the trunk all year until I broke it out.
Well, because I went to my grandma's house for Christmas last year and I wore it, and it's always super freaking hot in there.
Oh, it's like an oven.
So I changed out of it, and I just put it in the trunk, and it was there up until there about a week ago. But I'll be busting it out next week for Christmas. You betcha. Oh,
yeah?
Have you ever worn an ugly sweater, Dave?
I have not. No, never.
I've
had some ugly sweaters that could be misconstrued for a Christmas sweater.
No, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go this weekend and get you an ugly sweater to wear on Christmas.
Right on.
We're doing it.
I was the dude that was just a little too chubby that, like, I would try and wear, like, Abercrombie, like, Dawson's Creek, like sweater vests. And, like, I was the last person that could pull it off.
Look like a sweater vest.
Because it also coincided with the time that I would wear, like, corn t-shirts that were fucking either way too big or way too small for me. So
that sounds like you now.
I was an awkward child. Yeah, you bought me a corn t-shirt. That's why I fucking love this girl.
All right, next question.
All right.
Christmas trees. Now, obviously, they are very, you know, that's a classic tradition with people. Do you have a Christmas tree, Watson?
I do not. What's happening right now is wonderful. The wonderful winter. I can't remember. Of Watson Land. But here's the thing. I am kind of a Scrooge around Christmas time. Not when it comes to podcasting, because you've heard my Christmas episodes. They are massively Christmassy. And except for podcasting, though, I guess that's the really only thing I do. I mean, I'll make sure my son is taken care of with presents, but I don't really decorate. My Halloween decorations are still up.
Yes.
And, yeah, that's about it.
That's good.
Yeah.
We always cry when we take our Halloweens down, but we really like our setup for Christmas this year.
Yeah, what have you got?
Have our tree, and our topper.
We went hard at the dollar store.
Our topper is a LED light up angel. Yep. Like I have always had an angel. I was never a star person. So that was actually my question is, what would you put as your tree topper?
Ooh. Lacey, check this out. And it's kind of a bummer too, because a couple years ago I put on my Amazon wish list this really cool, just scary looking 7 foot tall Halloween tree. Ooh. And I had intended this year to buy it since we have more space than, you know, we ever have. My son and I live in this, you know, quaint little 3-bedroom house out in the country here, and just the two of us. So, and oftentimes, you know, on the weekends when he goes to his mom's, it's just me. So I have the space now to actually have a tree. And so I fully intended, okay, I'm going to buy this tree on Amazon, but they were sold out and I cannot find this thing anywhere online. And I had intended to top it with some sort of, you know, Lacey, I hadn't thought as far as to what I was going to put on the top of it, but I wanted it to be something kind of hideous and bloody looking is all I kind of know.
You can keep it up year round.
Yeah, right.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, that's an amazing answer.
No, we were actually going to get a Halloween tree as well.
Yeah, yeah. I know exactly what you mean. Those things are dope.
It was going to have a witch on top of it.
Yep. Yeah.
Ooh, good move. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could.
But we didn't get it.
I always have, though,
maybe next year,
liked, and obviously we'll get into it because I think this movie is the perfect example of it, but the mixing of the genres, you know, mixing of a Christmas movie with, obviously, horror.
Thank you for absolutely. That, yeah.
You know what would be a really good Christmas tree topper would be if you could find a little figurine of that little girl from The Witch and she's spinning going clickety clack. That'd be awesome. I'd just leave it on and be like, well, that's what that does all year.
Or a Krampus
I found a way to work Black Phillip into Dave Z's intro. Because I had to. How can you not?
Right?
It went, yo, 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 heads will explode. Sorry.
Wow. Love Dave Z.
Now, you have a son. Obviously, I think he's a little bit older, but...
Not so little anymore.
Does he still believe in Santa, or if not, when did he stop?
See, he's 17 now, so currently his Santa beliefs are pretty non-existent. I don't know if we ever did if his mother and I ever did the Santa Claus thing. I have a distinct memory of when he was about a month old, when Christmas time, his very first Christmas, because he's a November birthday, and right. He was a month old. We dressed him up like Santa and put him under the tree, and he's just lying there on his back. And I think that was literally the extent of his Santa Claus experience. He got to be Santa when he was like a month old.
Nice.
So you never like had him put out milk and cookies that you got to eat?
See, here's the thing, is I'm kind of a dick in that I want the credit for all the gifts and for that love. Like So Santa wasn't going to be stepping up on my ability to rock and roll with the present buying. You know what I'm saying? So.
This is Watts' moment of shine. He fucking did all that shopping. This fat guy comes down a chimney. He's going to take the credit for it. Not in this house.
No, thank you. So, yeah, I don't know. It was something that I didn't really think too deeply about. Honestly, if I really think about his childhood, it wasn't something we emphasized because he had a couple, especially after his mother and I split when he was five, he had a couple different Christmases he would go to, and it was just Santa wasn't really involved that much in either one of them except as a prop. So, yeah, that's
as a prop.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, too. It's like I told this story before, but it was like, you know, on Christmas morning, you'd wake up and it'd be from Santa. And, you know, my mom and grandmother would do this until, I was like 18, 19.
What
I think
do you
they
mean?
Still
they
do
still
it.
Do?
They still do it. They still do it.
Sent out stockings last year and it says from Santa.
So when it comes time to, you know, obviously thank the person and you don't know who the fuck it is, you got to hold it up and parade it. Thank you, Santa. Whoever Santa is, whoever bought me this. You know, and it's that awkward situation where you don't know who to thank. So... Taking that out of the equation, I feel like it's a smart move.
Well, I have one more question for the wonderful Winter World of Watson. And that is, what actress do you think would make a sexy Mrs. Claus?
Oh,
Mrs. Claus. Interesting. Maybe, let's see, who's like a scream queen right now who could pull it off in a horror or a super positive romantic comedy sort of context? If you want the Mrs. Claus to be slightly abusive, you could get Emma Roberts or Amber Heard. They'd look good, you know, and might hit you in the process.
Do you picture a young Mrs. Claus or an older Mrs. Claus?
I'm picturing something sexually viable for certain. Sarah Paxton probably. If we're speaking in terms of older, you know, kind of a more mature sensibility, like you would see depicted in the art and stuff like that, I think that the star of this movie here, Toni Collette, could nail it as a, you know, kind of a sexy older Mrs. Claus who can deliver the milk and the cookies, but, you know, straight up feel like your mom, you know,
see, your hot mom. For some reason, I picture Mrs. Claus as old.
Okay.
So I'm thinking of like an older, Helen Mirren, that's exactly who I was about to say.
Oh, no way.
I really was. You literally took the
She's
words
classy.
Out of my mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I also think that maybe Nicole Kidman might be able to pull that off quite well.
Definitely. Okay.
Yeah. You know, she'd be like that very, you know, because she has a very austere, kind of severe, beautiful look about her. Yeah. And I've always liked that about her since, you know, the Moulin Rouge days, you know, and she's, you know, doing.
Moulin Rouge avec moi.
Yeah, baby. Heck yeah, I can, you know, I can do the elephant love medley by myself, both parts. It doesn't fucking matter. Right. Ooh, okay. So, love is a many splendid thing. Love lifts us up where we belong. All you need is love. Now don't start that again. All you need is love. A girl has got to eat. All you need is love. She'll end up on the street. All you need is love. Love is just a game. And there's much more where that came from.
What the fuck just
happened? That was amazing. That was fucking amazing.
I'm deleting my intro and putting that for the intro.
Well, actually, that leads perfectly into our next segment.
Wow. Yes. Oh, my really God.
Because
what a transition that he just made that he didn't even realize he made.
Yes. Oh. Because I know that you are very musically inclined. Sometimes. So I created this segment just for you.
And if you thought that last tongue twister was twisty.
It was.
This one is called Whimsical Whistling Watson.
Ooh.
Ding, ding.
Whistling.
Ooh. All right. And in this segment, Mr. Watson, I'm going to give you a classic Christmas song.
Okay.
And then you are going to try to whistle the tune of it.
All right.
I think you're going to do really well at this.
Extra right. points if you do it out your butt.
No. You are that guy, aren't you?
Like, you it was just low hanging fruit, and I was just like,
gotta grab it. Yeah. My ass, that is.
Merry fucking Christmas, everybody.
Yes. All right. Now, back to the Christmas tunes.
Yes. Okay.
All right. The first one is I have five of these for you, by the way.
Okay.
All right. The first one is an easy one. I think this is a layup. I did it earlier.
You did.
This one is Here Comes Santa Claus.
He's nailing it.
Yeah?
He nailed that note.
That was really good.
I would have phoned that in.
Okay.
I would have skipped like eight of those notes. Yep. Wow.
Yeah, mine was like... Well, never mind.
Is that a bird trying to get inside because he's cold?
No.
Okay.
I don't know what that was. All right, next one is...
You guys are making me so happy.
Are you enjoying yourself?
I have a dumb, like I said, I have a dumb smile on my face right now. I'm glad nobody's looking at me and I don't
I
have
know,
a webcam.
These segments are really stupid, so thank you for being a soldier watcher. All right, next one is Jingle Bells.
No, hold on. I was going to the course. We're going to go. We're going to take it back.
Oh.
Oh.
Yep, I had to do that.
Even did the
Yep.
You just
spilled
your beer because that. She
I
was
did.
So impressed.
I was.
She spilt it on her Krampus blanket.
Oh, no.
On her Krampus
it's all right,
blankets.
I'll wash it tomorrow'sies.
Hey,
was amazing.
I am very impressed.
I told you he would be great at this.
I knew he would be. But he's even far exceeded my expectations.
That one was amazing, truly.
Yep, that was good. What else you got?
All right, the third one is Rudolph.
Ooh, okay. Let's go.
Oh, we got a little clap in there, too.
Like a light bulb.
Oh, it was like a light bulb. I thought it was like Pinocchio, but
oh, like yeah, was. Whichever one. I don't.
No, that was perfect.
Wow, amazing.
you are very
he
talented.
Nailed it.
Yeah,
yep.
It's kind of hard because I'm whistling into my pop filter, and I'm hoping it's coming through on your end.
Oh yeah,
yeah no,
yeah, exactly.
Really. All right, next one is Frosty the Snowman.
Oh, nice. Hell yeah.
Oh. Now, this would have been... now, just think if I gave this segment to somebody else that didn't know how to whistle.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but my last girlfriend couldn't whistle, and I'd always be like, okay, I'm kind of thinking of a song. I'm going to whistle the harmony, and you whistle the melody, and it goes a little something like this. She'd be like, shut up, Dustin.
Now, do you blow in or blow out?
Out.
See, I blow in, but I can whistle.
Okay. What is that, like, that Tenacious D sketch where he's talking, like, inward singing? Check it out.
I don't know. Like, that's just how I learned how to whistle.
I won't cook it, but I'll order it from Zanzibar.
That's a bar.
Yeah, I can usually, but I can't right now.
Yeah, Dan.
Yeah, barely.
Yeah, you're terrible.
Thank you.
He's going... Like, you look like you're pushing out for a pregnancy.
Exactly. You look Actually, baby, I have something to tell you.
No. What?
Uh-oh.
That makes so much more sense. All right. We got
what do you mean
for you, and I think you'll nail it. It's
okay.
Silent Night.
Ooh.
I'm good.
No. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I am so impressed by you.
Dude, we didn't even plan that. Like, no, it's not like we had a conversation with Watson.
He didn't know
like,
that we were doing this
hey,
at all.
Hey, make sure you're up on your whistling game.
Yeah, no, I just thought it
Dude.
Was fun. I didn't.
Yeah, this is a blast. I'm like getting in the. I can't believe I'm getting. My son is going to be like in the next room going like, is my dad actually getting into the Christmas spirit? I think I am. 12 days of Christmas, motherfuckers.
No, I was going to say, for somebody that's a fucking Scrooge, doesn't even have a tree up.
Nope.
Knows Christmas music pretty fucking well.
I refuse the whole Grinch argument.
Yeah,
not tonight, my friend.
After that,
tonight.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think the Christmas spirit is in him. This is a real Christmas miracle.
You merry little snuggle fuck.
Yeah, I think so. It's my favorite Christmas song is "Oh Holy Night," and that's a hard one. I'd have to do some vocal warm ups to even just try to, especially that chorus, when it just
Can
gets super high. Oh, let's see. Okay. And then I want to go to that high part. Let's see if I can even whistle that high. Yeah, that's where I reach my limit.
Oh, my God, dude.
The angel voice. Yeah, that part gets like – I didn't – my Carmex was wearing off. I swear I can do that. But then that Oh Night divine part would be like – would be killing me. But, yeah, that is a song I do – listen to a Christmas album every year. It's a singer I like named Kevin Max, and a punk band I also like called Bad Religion, surprisingly has a Christmas album. I like to bring those two out to feel good.
So. Yeah, you never failed to impress me. Yeah.
Wow, yes.
Oh, you're very musical.
Okay, now break out your guitar. No,
yeah, I know, right? I don't know any Christmas songs on guitar, I don't think.
He's like, I'm in the mood now, I'm in the zone.
I know.
Yes.
All right.
That's amazing.
Watson knows a little bit about being Santa, so
yes,
we decided for this next segment called Naughty or Nice.
Ooh, this is a good one, Watson.
Okay.
We are going to give you names of podcasters in our community. And you get to put them on the naughty or nice list, but you have to tell us why.
Yes, get them.
I am on the spot right now.
Yes. Okay. Yep.
All right. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Just checking it twice. Who's naughty or nice?
Who's first on the list, baby?
First one. Why don't we give him his co-host from the WotC party?
Oh.
Dave Z is one of my best buddies, and I want Santa to make sure he gets a splendid gift this year, so I'm putting him on the nice list, because he is nice to me, and whenever Brandon and Christian talk their mad shit, he's always like, aw, he always feels bad. So, Dave Z, nice.
Yes.
Okay, well, bringing him up, let's go Brandon Orlick.
Uh-oh.
Okay, now, this is going to surprise some folks. Brandon, and I'm just going to put it right out there, is Jewish. Next.
Oh, my God. Did you really just?
No. When he's not subverting our culture, he is too busy. No, I'm kidding. Oh, man. Don't be anti-Semitic. Okay. Wait. Oh, shit. I'm not on mute. No. So, no, Brandon is going on the nice list because we've been talking a lot recently. Just we'll just go back and forth and be like, hey, have you seen this movie? And I'm going to be on Exploding Heads for their year-end show. And he has invited me on Exploding Heads as much as Dave has. So, Brandon, I want Brandon to get a nice Christmas gift, not Hanukkah.
Okay. And let's just finish that trio off with Mr. Looch Christian.
Okay.
He goes, okay.
Where will the lump of coal go?
In
wherever
the
you
place
want.
That is unknown.
In his looch.
Naughty. Naughty. And naughty for that young man. We're going to see how many lumps of coal we can get up there. So however many naughties, that's how many it takes.
That kind of changes the whole preface of the word naughty.
It really does.
That's not how
He goes, naughty.
That's not how I planned that going. Or where.
You did say you wanted him to put the coal in the looch.
That's true.
You did say that that's
You're welcome.
On you. All right. Why don't we move on to the next trio of podcasters from 22 Shotsers.
Okay. Uh-oh.
Let's start off with Jeremy Freeman.
Jeremy Freeman. Yet again, he's one of those other types, one of those banker types. I am going to get canceled, and that's all right. No, Jeremy's great. He invited me. He was making a joke. Oh, no, he was being serious, but he thought I wouldn't respond to him. He said, you should come on the 22 Shots Twilight franchise episode. And I asked him, I was like, how serious are you being right now? He said, 100%. I just thought you would think I was like fucking joking with you. And I was like, interesting. I might have to do this. And so Jeremy cracks me up. Yeah. We'll put him once again, if Santa Claus, the Christmas gentleman, can bring Jeremy a Christmas gift, then I am fine spreading Christmas cheer.
None of this fucking, you get 8 presents.
No, just 1.
Let's go to Moods with a Z.
Ooh. Yeah, boy!
Yeah. He's the homie. Good. We'll definitely throw him down for a nice as well. I was supposed to, when all this pandemic stuff was happening, there was a show, I think it was, what was it, he invited me to. He was like, you should come up and we should go hit up Atmosphere. I think was going to play. I wanted to. We just couldn't make it happen. So, yeah, Moods, he's rock and rolling. And he's different from Brandon and Jeremy in certain ways that I find rather cool. So he celebrates Christmas. I like him.
Well, and then we got to go to the last 22 shotter.
Mr. Justin. Yes, absolutely nice.
JP.
I love.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, JP. Love Justin. He's great. Nice. He's the homie, dude. I love him.
He's a good shit.
And, you know, in correlation with 22 Shots, this gal is right up there with them, Miss Carly.
Oh, I love – no, Carly gets nice all the way. Carly's the best.
What would you what would you give Carly if you were to give her a Christmas
present? A Santa gift?
Like, it has to be – well, she's not – you know. She celebrates Christmas.
Anti-Semitic.
No, I would give Carly, let's see. Oh, I'll tell you what I'd give Carly. I would give her a DVD of the movie Lady Terminator.
I would give her the D.
Oh, please don't edit that like that, Dan or Lazy, whoever's editing this. No, I would seriously give her a DVD of Lady Terminator because she and Justin do this thing, JP rather, do this Halloween sort of marathon, and they try to outdo each other with sometimes strange movies
would
be a hit for the group. Terminator would slay.
Yeah.
And I was trying to do a Christmas pun there, and I don't really do those.
It landed.
But thank you, Lacey. Yeah, it would be great. It's Lady Terminator. So, yeah, if I were to give Carly a gift, and I suck at giving gifts and receiving them, I am the worst. That's where my Scrooge-ness comes back in. But it would be Lady Terminator. So, rock and roll, Carly.
You said slay. I get it.
Yeah, slay.
And then we're going to go with the next person who wishes he was a 22 shot or permanent, the sleeper of the sky, Mike Merriman.
The things, all things lunar. Well,
okay, let's see. Hold on. I can make Mike Merriman appear on this podcast right now. Hold on. Watch this. Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Donald Trump.
Well, you know.
Hey, Mike, how's it going? Welcome to another episode of whatever it is I host. Mike's great. Mike's one of the OGs. I love Mike. We'll throw him down for a.
Well, no, hang on. I'm gonna.
Mike's okay.
I'm gonna post an argument for you here.
Okay.
And then you can decide whether he's on the Naughty or Nice list.
All right. Tell
me. He falls asleep on his friends.
Oh, Mike. Mike, you and I are cool because you've never fallen asleep on me. But if what I'm hearing is true, and I do believe Miss Lacey Liu, got it. I'm not gonna ask you to take the coal like the Looch takes the coal and loves to take the coal. By the way, you're gonna get a naughty, but your lump of coal will go in a nice silk stocking with like a $5 bill in it to give to one of your kids. Only one though. You have to choose.
Okay,
Sophie's choice.
So just to recap here.
Okay.
Mike is on the naughty list then.
For the sleeping thing, but he's still getting a little kickback. Little.
Okay, just for the kids.
Yeah, for the kids.
Okay.
$5.
All right, and then we have one of your co-hosts, Mr. Duncan McLeish.
Arum. Duncan is he gets all the nice points that are left ever because he's awesome. I love that Scottish sexy stud.
So, wait, this just in. Since we've been recording, Duncan has dropped 5 podcasts.
Six.
Nope, and it just went up to 9.
Oh, there's a new Ben Wheatley movie out, 8.
He gets a nice for every podcast he has dropped today, so about 9 or 10.
Right?
How about Mr. Neil Nudie LeMoy?
Oh, it's been a long time since I've talked with that guy, since we did the trivia thing. Yeah, Neil's cool. I haven't caught up with him in forever, since the summer. So, wait, was it that long ago? No way. Was it? No, spring.
Well, trivia never even ended.
It sure didn't. Well,
no, so you know what? You should put JP and Brandon on the naughty list for that.
Well, can the anti-banker stuff I said still apply?
Always. Yes. That applies in every aspect of life.
What am I doing?
I feel like we kind of got viewed out of that, you know.
Stop being shysty.
Yeah. Neil is... He strikes me as not very like that. So, you know, he hasn't made a meme of me. You know what? He gets a naughty only because he hasn't made a meme of me in a long time. But I, in all fairness, I do need to reach out. So it's a little my fault.
Might prompt a meme. So maybe he can be on the nice list for next year.
Yes. Okay. Deal.
All right.
He would be happy to be on any list.
Oh, shit.
All right, Santa deal. Watson.
Okay.
What about Dan Chase?
Oh, shit.
Dan Chase is... He's one of the few people who... it has been a while since we've done it, but he's one of the few people we've actually talked...
What do you mean, a while since you've done it?
Hold on. Talked on the phone. And telephone. Okay. Telephone
well,
talking.
I mean, I was a little...
That's... I swear.
You were about to get fighting, Lou.
Yeah. I know. I realize I'm about to get on the naughty list. So nice all the way. Dan Chase is my brother from another mother, and I'm down. We have each other's phone number, and it's cool. Yeah, nice for Dan Chase.
Well, thank you, sir.
And then your final list that you need to maybe check once or twice is for little old me, Lacey Lou.
Lacey Lou.
Oh, absolutely nice. You're the nicest.
I don't know, baby.
I don't know if I believe that at all.
After these segments you've done and the smile that is on my dumb face because of just these awesome questions and how much fun I'm having on a Wednesday night of all freaking nights, you deserve a freaking stocking full of the liquor of your choice in no coal.
yes.
And no coal.
The problem is Santa didn't leave it in the bottle. He just poured it in the stocking, so you're kind of fucked.
Okay, so I've been a little naughty. Okay.
Stocking shooters.
You know what? I'll take it,
Fuck yes.
I'll take it.
Yes, indeed.
All right, well, that wraps up our triple wonderful winter whimsical
wacky
naughty or nice Watson Wonderland.
Woo! Mr. Watson, you're the best.
That was amazing.
Right back at you.
All right. So we are going to get into our feature review.
Yes.
Now, before we get into that and before I read the synopsis from IMDb.
Oh, my God. She got it right.
Okay.
Ow!
All right. So everybody who's been listening to these episodes. And
IMDb, as our listeners.
I have been apparently. I edited one episode and I heard it for the first time. I've been saying I am BV.
And I just let it go for years.
Yeah, for 2 years. He just told me about it 2 nights ago.
I find it endearing. And now that she switched it up, I don't know. I think I might have made a mistake, Mr. Watson. I know. I shot myself in my dick.
Yeah.
In my own dick.
Well, you're like
with a pellet gun.
No, with a BB Rider.
There we go. You poke out the one eye.
Red Rider BB gun.
Wow.
It's all fun and games until someone gets their dick shot off.
That is even funner. No, that's not fun at all.
All right, so we gave sorry.
What the fuck is our neighbor doing? You know, you want to talk about a real Krampus. You want to talk about a real Grinch. Should
What's
be
happening?
Our fucking neighbor in our duplex.
But, all right, so back to what I was saying. Thank you for that.
Sorry.
She just left, so we should be good.
I hate her. I just hate
okay,
her.
So we obviously definitely wanted you on for 12 Days of Chasemas.
Yes.
And we only gave one person an option to choose movies from. We did not give you that option. Right away, like, we had a list of the movies that we wanted to cover.
Right.
And we were doing classic Christmas films, obviously. And Dan was like, no, we're Watson, Krampus. Krampus. That's it. Like,
it's okay.
We're not sending it anything else. We're no, Watson is for Krampus. I want the whole Watson treatment.
Yep.
Of, yep. You know, he's
give,
you better bring
give
it
to me.
Ordinance.
I want it for Christmas and I want it under
yeah,
my
no,
tree.
It
I want Watson under my tree in footsie pajamas. And I want him to tell me the Krampus story.
And feed me eggnog.
Feed it to
eggnog,
me.
Yes.
Hey, Mr. Watson, I will say this, though. Like, mm-hmm. In a lot of situations with a lot of podcasters, I love everybody. A lot of it is, like, trying to match things up. You mm-hmm. were the only one where it was automatic.
It was non-negotiable.
I was like, nope. I was like, no, no. As if nothing else works. Like, there's certain things in life
no,
that are
he
just
knew
clear.
Right away. Like, after he made the list, he was like, without question, Watson is Krampus. That's it. And we hadn't
wow.
even seen anybody.
Yep. I'm touched. That's
yeah.
That's so cool.
What a fucking snowball.
He wanted
to shake
for
it up.
Krampus.
I'm so glad that was what you selected for me, because this movie has become an official Christmas tradition in the Watson household. Like,
yes.
Every single Christmas Eve, my son and I do a double feature. Every single one since this movie came out, we'll do a double feature of Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, and
oh.
Krampus. Like, you know, with I know I said I could be a little bit of a Scrooge, but like, we don't have many traditions, honestly, but this is one that my son and I treasure. And what's funny, you know, and I know we're going to get into our thoughts on the movie, but like, what's funny is that back in 2015, I took my son and the horrible woman I was dating back then to see this. And truth be told, I was like, it's cool. I like it. But then I just remember thinking I'll probably never watch it again. The humor didn't hit with me that first time around. The tonal shift from Act One, where, you know, the movie is a straight up Christmas family comedy sort of movie, then to Act Two, where it becomes dark and cold. It like didn't work for me. And I was just kind of like, well, this is all right. I love Trick or Treat. And so, yeah, long story short, though, because Trick or Treat was and is remains to be one of my favorite horror movies of all time. Yep. It was like, I don't know if I had to get into my mindset back then. I'd say that I was expecting something on that level and I felt like I didn't get it. But then the next year, that same awful blonde lady, same son, we watched it again and it was night and day. I fell in love with the movie and did an in-depth review of it on episode 6 of my old solo cast Horror Corridor, which, you know, yeah. And rest in peace. And Jerry Herring of Kill the Cast still maintains to this day that that's his favorite of my reviews. And so it just means a lot to me that this movie means a lot to me, and it means a lot to me that you picked me for this one. I'm honored. Thank you.
Oh, and I love that review of yours too. And there was so much that I got out of it. And here's the thing about Krampus too. There's so much to dive into.
Gosh.
I feel like, and you know, you're just the perfect guy for that, Mr. Watson. Now, when I first found this movie myself, you know, it's funny. It's very similar to your story. Mm-hmm. I watched it and I couldn't pinpoint why, but the coldness of it kind of just rubbed me the wrong way. And I attribute that to more of a me thing. Like I can realize in a lot of, you know, first time watches that I wasn't feeling something and I just wasn't feeling it. So, okay, I'm going to give this another watch. And like you said, upon rewatch, I really watched it, and man, it hit me in all the right ways. You know, it's one of those few movies where it can balance such atmosphere mm-hmm. and such a classic thing as Christmas, and make it, you know, basically horror, like a horror movie as well.
Did you say horror?
Horror movie.
Horror corridor, exactly.
and you know, that's one thing that Doherty does. He mm-hmm. balances things perfectly.
Shannon?
Yes, his sister Shannon. She's a big influencer. Whistle the 90210 theme. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I
don't do that. Don't do that, Watson.
No, please.
I don't know it. I've never seen the show.
It's all guitar solo. Okay. But no, like I think that this movie, while it's very dark at first, if you really dive into it, it's actually one of the best, you know, most depressing, kind of saddest horror movies out there.
Well, let me read the synopsis and then we'll dive right into all of this, guys.
Thank you, Lacey.
I have a lot to say about my first time watch versus my second as well.
Ooh.
So, yeah, so here comes the narration voice.
Do it, baby.
A boy who has a bad Christmas accidentally summons a festive demon to his family home. When his dysfunctional family clashes over the holidays, young Max gets disillusioned and turns his back on Christmas. Meanwhile, this lack of festive spirit unleashes the wrath of Krampus, a demonic force of ancient evil intent on punishing non-believers. All hell breaks loose as beloved holiday icons take on a monstrous life of their own, laying siege to the fractured family's home and forcing them to fight for one another if they hope to survive.
Wow.
That was amazing.
Damn.
I actually think that's my best narration.
You sounded like Cate Blanchett in Lord of the Rings.
What do you mean?
Like, fuck, baby.
Was it sexy?
Yo, let me hit pause real quick.
Yeah.
Shit. God damn.
That was impressive.
And I will say that I like that. I like that synopsis on IMDb.
Yeah, it was a little extra. I wasn't expecting to have to read that much.
That was a lot, right? Right.
Because a lot of them are like sometimes just one sentence.
They could have been like, "Krampus is coming to town," and that would have sufficed. But yes.
All right, so let's get into the wonderful world of Watts and Krampus. Now, you kind of spoke briefly about it already. So you've seen this when it came out, Watson, like in 2015?
Mm-hmm. Yep, sure did, right? Yep, first, I think, could have been opening weekend, yeah.
Yeah, same. What about you, Dan?
I saw it, the year it came out for sure. The thing is,
you pirate it?
Yes. as soon as I said that, I was like, Lacey was gonna put two and two together, and you did.
You
right
used
there.
To pirate fucking everything.
I used to. Now I pay like money for everything. I'm sorry, I'm a bad person. But I'm
no,
changed.
You made the nice list this year.
Oh, so yeah exactly. See, I'm good
you're
on somebody.
You didn't get a stocking with non-bottle.
I thought this movie was good, but I was not that high on it until my second watch. And then once I really got into it, I realized, oh, wow, this movie is so brilliant. And again, one of the main things that I think is so important in these, you know, holiday themed movies is atmosphere. And holy fuck, does this movie have atmosphere up the fucking wazoo.
I'm sorry, what was that word?
Up the looch.
Atmosphere.
Up the atmosphere. Atmosphere. Atmosphere.
We're just learning so many new words
Pocky-car.
On these Christmas episodes.
Listen here. But no, I loved it though on second watch. I thought it was good, but I wasn't obviously 100% in it on my first one. But yeah, second one, I loved it and I've loved it ever since. And to this point right now, much like Watson said as well, it's become like a staple for me. Like I have to watch this every Christmas. And you know, it's funny because it's one of those movies that I get excited for because, you know, the end of Halloween is so depressing or whatever that it's a nice buffer movie where it's one of those where it's like, hey,
it's a good transition.
Yeah, the genre's still alive and, you know, it helps me, you know, to embrace the Christmas spirit too. So
yeah, see, for me, I'm gonna tell a classic Watson story of where the first time I watched it, I was really drunk.
Oh,
it was hell yeah.
It was opening weekend, but I hated it. Like, I'm still coherent when I'm watching it, but I didn't remember certain things that I liked so much when I watched it sober.
Right.
So when I was watching this, I was sober starting, but by the end I was shit-faced. And this was opening weekend, and, you know, it's a brew house movie theater, so sometimes that happens.
Right.
Hey, it's all right.
But so I didn't fully like encompass it. And I just remember I was like, oh, this is fucking stupid. And, you know, I did one of those things. So yeah. I gave it a rewatch like a couple years later and I covered it for Pop Horror.
Mm-hmm.
And when I watched, like, it went from like a 2 to a 5.
Oh, wow.
Like, I'm not sure if I'm there yet. We'll find out later.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, we will. So I'm not going to give my, because this is my, technically my third time watching it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but it went from a 2 to a 5. I really enjoyed that second watch a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it encompassed everything that it needed to, the atmosphere.
Right.
Atmosphere. I really liked all the actors.
Yep.
I loved the story. I loved the ending. Mm-hmm. It just worked for me on that second watch.
Yeah.
So happy to hear that.
Yeah. Well, did it work on the third watch, though?
Ooh, fair enough.
You know, because everybody talks about these second time watches.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What about the fucking third time watch? I mean, right. That can make a difference.
Dave famously has said that a movie's only as good as the last time you've watched it. So,
That's very true.
Yeah, his opinion changed big time, too, when we talked to him about the last movie as well. And, you know, it's funny because, when we were watching this, you know, we've been watching all these Christmas movies for this 12 Days of Chasmas, right? And there are obviously certain themes that a lot of Christmas movies try and get across. Now, this theme, while it's very simplistic in a way, there's so many fucking different ways it can be interpreted in the end. Mm-hmm. There are so many different elements to this that are very kind of symbolic. And while it's kind of like on the surface stuff like, hey, you know, the Jack-in-the-Box clown fucking looking thing and the teddy bear and all those things, they obviously – and the robot, those represent like Christmas toys, right? Like that's it's the fucking sick, demented version of that. It's the 5 Days of Freddy version of that, right? So all these different things, though, you know, it really does invigorate the fucking horror fan in me. You know, all these things used with a Christmas backdrop, it makes me so fucking happy. It makes me realize that, you know, the director and the writers, they had a clear direction. And they had such an emphasis on certain things and certain themes in this movie that it works for me in fucking spades. Like, this movie works on so many different levels. And while it's not a perfect movie, those themes that I talked about that all these other Christmas movies have in common, like the family themes or whatever, I find it more prevalent in this movie than I do a lot of the Christmas classics, like, you know, even A Christmas Vacation or something. Like, this is a sick and twisted version, obviously, but it cuts deep, so to speak.
I am so with you on that. Well said.
Yeah. No, and there's something about if a movie can make me feel something, and automatically it shoots at the top of the list, and, you know, probably – this probably makes my top 50 movies of all time.
Oh, 50 of all time?
Shitty. A.K.A. Ferrari F50.
Let's talk about this opening, because obviously it gives a feel and a certain tone. Mm-hmm. I feel like it keeps pace with this, but I feel like we got a completely different movie than what the opening kind of...
Right.
But yet, it's not completely different at all, like, as you watch it as a whole, but, like, when you're watching it for the first time...
Right.
You think it's going to be something else.
The whole family dynamic and...
Yeah, the opening is, you know, Black Friday shoppers or late Christmas shoppers, whatever it is, and, you know, there's storm in the store and just these awful people, very greedy, whatever... And, you know, it just kind of shows, you know, the tone of the film. But you're not really realizing that it's just going for, you know, people not really embracing the true spirit of Christmas.
Right. And that's the theme right off the
bat. Yeah. And, I mean, you don't really get that at that point in time. You're just like, oh, it's another Christmas movie.
It's in slow-mo, so it looks fucking hilarious. Yeah.
Like,
like, what to follow is just so crazy, but it that tone really, I mean, it gets you involved.
That scene stands for something, and you don't even realize it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
absolutely.
What do you think, Watson?
Gosh, I couldn't agree more. I love how you're pointing out sort of how that first scene is emphasizing the commercialism of the holiday, which is just what the holidays, it's not about that, or at least it wasn't originally, you know, and it's what they're getting lost in, these people. And it's kind of an unfortunate thing to see, you know, to see the way people are stepping on each other and fight. It's hilarious. But when you really think about it, when you kind of look at the instances where, shoot, people really do this, don't they? And it's just like, ouch. It sucks. Right. Sucks to look at humanity sometimes.
Well, and you know, it's funny too, because, you know, we kind of laugh about, you know, these episodes, even, you know, trying to bring everybody together, just kind of like literally in the true meaning and the spirit of Christmas, you know, And even getting you involved with this episode, Mr. Watson, I feel like that's kind of, you know, what we're trying to do.
I love it.
Just bring people together.
Just bring people, exactly, you know, and be about it. I'm sorry.
Is it okay if I read you something?
Yes, yeah. Please.
Okay. And so this was something that I had read in my original review of it, and I wanted to bring this little portion of an excerpt of an interview that Michael Dougherty had done with an online rag called Westword. And was it online or was it a video? I can't remember what it was. But anyways, the interviewer asks him, or mentions rather, he says, listen, he goes, Trick or Treat was such a love letter to the spirit of Halloween. So is Krampus a love letter to Christmas, or do you, like most people, hate the holidays? And here's what he says. He says, it's different. With Halloween, it's pure love. It's such an unpretentious holiday, and everyone gets creative and weird and fun and loses all pretense of what's normal or expected. And then Christmas. And then he goes on to say, I'm an idealist and an optimist, and for me, Christmas always felt like it was hiding something because of the fact that it didn't have Halloween's same vivacious atmosphere or tone. With Christmas, everything's always supposed to be either cheery or bright and uplifting, and sometimes with Christmas, everything's always supposed to be either cheery or bright and uplifting, and something always felt false about that. And then he goes on to say, I did a little bit of research, and I found out that the way Christmas is truly meant to be celebrated and where it came from is different from what we have today. The over-commercialization, all the stuff we complain about with the pressure of the holidays, that's not what it was really designed for, but what we've collectively been willing to put up with and accept, despite the mass hysteria that it creates with the pressure of buying gifts and receiving gifts plus seeing family. And then I'll skip forward a little. He basically says it truly started as a pagan celebration that was very similar to Halloween, and really they butted up against each other, and in some traditions the holiday season really starts on November 1st and it lasted much longer. The pagans acknowledged that it was the darkest time of the year and a frightening time when we didn't have crops and it was freezing. So all of the lights and candles and greenery and colors were meant to sort of ward off evil spirits and danger, but there was a sense of mystery and magic and even eeriness that Christmas used to have, and that I was excited to try and bring those back. So I love it. Yeah.
I love that, though.
Can I just say one thing? Like, you don't even need to, like, change your voice for, like, narration.
Yeah, you just are
amazing.
You just are.
Did I change my voice?
No,
you didn't, and that's the
point. I had to change mine earlier.
That was an awesome change, though. That was so cool.
No, but, like, your voice is just very stunning as a reader.
Like an angel.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate that. That means a lot to me. I hope that sets the tone with where we're trying to go with this, because that's what we're all saying. And I guess, you know, who would say it better than Dougherty himself? And I was touched by that when I read that, when I was doing my initial research for, you know, these notes and even my notes back when I did that episode in 2016. And it just struck me as like, wow, that he really did attempt to capture that sort of underlying darkness that is in essence kind of the true spirit of Christmas. And then one of you, and I'm sorry, I think you both were emphasizing, or starting to emphasize it anyway, family.
Yes.
And Dan, you had mentioned that this even surpasses some of the Christmas classics in its the way it tackles family.
Right.
And I think we should talk more about that. I think that'd be a good
starting.
What'd you think of the families?
Personally, I thought that the family dynamic portrayed in this movie was fucking great. You know, you got the aunt from she's obviously in Edward Scissorhands. She's in Two and a Half Men.
Which we just covered. Not Two and a Half Men, but we did not just cover Two and a Half Men.
No, we didn't cover her. She's in that. She's the old lady.
She was the fat bitch.
Yes.
Who was like, I'm calling the police.
In Edward Scissorhands, yes.
No, Watson, if there's any episode that you would like an in-depth discussion about, we're covering these classics and having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But we really go in-depth with Edward Scissorhands.
That was a great one.
I can't wait to hear it. You know what? It's so funny that you bring that up and just pause it, because we're going to get back to the family talking here. But you started something. I'm basically probably going to get canceled from this episode. And I need to tell you a little funny story about Edward Scissorhands. The other night I'm having a drink. I'm just sitting, you know, in my house watching a movie, and my friend texts me. He goes, hey, what's that movie with Winona Ryder and Johnny Depp? And I go, Edward Scissorhands. And he writes, LOL. And oh man, that would be, and he literally, it says, he goes, that would be hilarious. We need to make that movie. I'm like, I'm just like kind of tipsy. I'm like, what is he talking about? And then he starts making all these, and he's biracial so he can get away with it, but he was making all these pretty racist jokes. And I'm going like, all right, first off, if we want to do this, we'll do this. But like, where did this come from? And so I ask him, like, all right, I'm ready to drop some things that'll get me canceled. But what are you saying? And then he goes, oh, was that a typo? And I go, was what a typo? He goes, go read your very first text to me. And so I scroll up. And it turns out I spelled Edward wrong. I didn't spell it E-D-W-A-R-D. I spelled it E-N-W-A-R-D. So it was N-word Scissorhands. So he thought I was making a black joke, and he's half black. And I was like, well, listen, if we tell people this story from now on, that's what I was doing. But I swear it's just me being tipsy and typing wrong. So yes, N-word Scissorhands is a movie that anyways, I'm sorry to get us derailed, but I did not know that the aunt in this was in Edward Scissorhands. It's been years since I've seen it. So sorry, back to the family dynamic here. Was the contrast between the two sections of the family, and that even in that first watch when I wasn't that hot on the movie, that contrast really stood out to me and was probably my favorite part. Because with Max and his family, you have these upper middle class types who are very likely left leaning in their sensibilities. They're superficial yet sincere. They're hoity-toity and kind of, you know, bougie, yet well-meaning, right?
What does bougie mean?
Like bourgeois means like rich. It kind of like it's the opposite of the proletariat. So you got the proletariat.
Well, it even sounds like...
Oh, doesn't it? Bourgeoisie. Bougie. Yeah. So they're kind of hoity-toity, bougie, yet they're well-meaning. And, you know, Max and his definitely legal sister, I just want to say, are just...
wow.
I'm getting canceled. If N-word Scissorhands didn't do it, that's going to do it. So Max and his sister, they're all dressed prim and proper. Mom and dad looking good. Hereditary mom and stepbrother's dad or, you know, pictures.
No, actually, hang on. Let me ask you this. Oh,
yeah.
Do you actually think that Adam Scott and Toni Collette are believable as a couple?
Okay. We can get into that because I actually... I wouldn't say I do. Maybe Toni Collette around the time of The Sixth Sense, sure.
Right.
Yeah. It is a little strange, but I'm just gonna say it's nice to see things like that. But anyways,
I mean, yeah, I get it, but at the same time I don't.
Right.
Maybe I'm a little superficial or whatever, but I just do not find this woman attractive in the slightest.
Oh really?
I mean I'm gonna get canceled for that.
No, that's all right. Neither Dan or I said it. It was you. So it's all good. You're shielded.
And the thing is, I think about The Sixth Sense as well, and I just think about her teeth in that film.
Here's the thing.
There's like a big space.
Here's the thing, though. I've seen couples that I know fucking don't belong together. And I don't think that they were necessarily that. I think that they were indicative of the characters, like, you know, the kid alluded to in his letter to Santa, you know, he wanted them to get back together, to love each other.
Oh, I'm being superficial. I'm talking looks alone.
Oh, just looks? Oh, yeah, yeah. No,
well, let's keep on the superficiality because I talked about how they're superficial, but these are sincere characters. That right. And this is Max's family I'm highlighting right here, just the immediate family.
Yes.
And even if the actors maybe don't belong together, we'll just pretend they do for the sake of the story for right now. And everybody in that family, they are who they are, which is to say that one thing I like about it is they're not written as caricatures. And listen, right. The same goes for David Koechner's family, the cousins, who they're representative of your blue collar, Second Amendment, rural types. And at first, it seems like, and I remember on my first viewing, I was thinking, okay, they seem to only exist in order to provide the comedy, and you can, you know, kind of look down on them a little bit because, you know, they're probably right-wing deplorables. But then you get to know them and you find that they're full of love and family values that place that family and that need for protection at the center of everything. And what's cool about this movie is, like, none of the characters here are one-dimensional and poorly drawn out. Like, this movie wants you to engage with both sides of the, you know, political and familial divide so that you can see these people as people. And man, that touches me. And I think that's what hit me that second go around. The message is unity. It's about two factions coming together to stand against a common threat. And, you know, I only wish our country understood this on a larger scale so we no longer have to deal with, you know, the incendiary Trumps and the warmongering Bidens of the world. You know, when I watch this movie, I get a feeling of hope. And I, like I said, I can, well, except for tonight, you're bringing that at me. I can be a Scrooge. So minus the McDuck and that vault full of money that you can swim in. You know what I'm talking about. But anyways, Yeah. What do you think about the family? I know that N-word Scissorhands thing kind of got
I know this, Mr. Watson, that in the beginning, David Koch's character is very much so a Cousin Eddie, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I
met him, by the way.
You met him, Lacey. Like,
what?
He is fucking fantastic. Him as the fucking dude in Out Cold. Like, he's been in so many movies. He is fantastic. I will say, though, is to Watson's point, you know, there is a certain point where he stops just being, you know, the comic relief. And you do start to care about him, you know, and in that first interaction that they do have with the Krampus outside there, and you know, Adam Scott uses the gun, and he's just like, hey, he's just like, you're not what does he say? I forget the line, but he's like, you're not a big pussy or whatever, and he's just like, yeah, thanks. And like, okay, so automatically, though, I figured, all right, like, he has a redeeming quality now, so, you know, we care about him. But he's wounded, so he's done for. And they did something really smart, because usually in horror movies, when somebody's fucking injured like that, they don't last the whole fucking movie. And he wasn't just kept around for comic relief, like Watson said. All these characters had depth to them. They all had arcs. You know, a lot conveyed in simple scenes. You know, the scene with Toni Collette when she goes into the kitchen and she's telling the other older bitch that she's like, you know, just lay off me a little, calm down. Mm-hmm. And you can see she's like, oh yeah, maybe I am a fucking asshole, you know, and like all these things. And I think it's beautifully done because it doesn't hit you over the head with it. It's conveyed in just a look, in just one shot. And I think that's fucking beautiful.
Well, what I think is really cool is that I got something completely different than what you guys got out of.
Cool. Awesome.
This watch. I was actually really proud of myself as I was even taking notes.
Is this the point?
Yes.
Is this the thing?
Yeah, I might as well just get into it. Because what I took away from this film was completely separate than what you guys are talking about, like unity and everything.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I took away, you know, this family. They're all terrible.
Right.
And
right.
Both sides. And I believe it comes down to the seven deadly sins.
Ooh, tell it.
And
I know who Sloth is, that fat little fuck.
Yes. So, all right. I can pinpoint all of these things. So Sloth, Sloth is the ant because she's lazy and she just sits there and, you know, she doesn't do anything up until like the very, very end when she's like gladly when she's going to shoot him. But right. Up until then, she's just a lazy bitch who wants to be fed.
Okay.
Gluttony is the fat kid who's just eating everything.
Obviously.
You know, Lust is the daughter who is going after her boyfriend.
Watson, we need to explain that one.
Greed.
Later.
Greed is the daughters that the dad obviously wanted to be boys, but all they care about is their Christmas gifts.
Right.
Those, you know.
Yeah, they're a little fucking.
Pride is, David Kirshner, because he goes out there and
mm-hmm.
you know,
he's
prideful.
Man.
Envy is obviously the other side of the family, but I would say the sister, she's very envious of the lifestyle that, you know, that they have money and whatnot.
Right.
Then you have Wrath, which is the little kid, the main star, our protagonist of the film, the little boy, when he rips up his Santa.
Oh my
letter.
God, wow. Babe.
So I truly believe
holy
that,
shit.
You know, the seven, did I name all seven there? Yeah, greed, lust, gluttony, wrath, sloth, pride, envy. Yeah, I believe that's a very big thing and that encompasses this whole film.
Do you think that's what they were going for?
I don't know, but as I was watching, it makes sense to me, baby. Everything, you know, with the kid overeating, with, you know, the kids being greedy with the presents, you know, the daughter lusting after her boyfriend. I mean, she puts that before her family.
What about the cute dog? What did he represent? He was fucking adorable. That's a great point, baby. That
Lacey,
is very astute.
That's a fantastic reading of the characters. And in fact, I had not thought of to tie in the seven deadly sins, but I think that you are onto something that completely ties into my interpretation of the ending of this movie and why it's perfect that they do have these flaws and that they have incurred the, well, I'm going to use, you know, one of the words, you know, the wrath, I guess, of Krampus, and have fallen under his spell and are kind of in his world for now. And I you know, when we get to the ending, I'm sure we have things to talk about before that.
Yeah,
I
we don't
really
have
want to
just yet.
Yeah, I want to tie in your reading of the characters to my interpretation of the ending, because I don't think we are saying two different of things, because it's like I was saying, that I do think the characters are well drawn out because they are clearly flawed, and you just spelled it out, I think, the best I've ever heard. But they also have their good side too, which gets them to the point, well, and they even have their series of failures, but it's what happens at the end and what that, I believe, it represents. And just so we can, you know, kind of drop talk of the ending before we get there.
Yeah.
The creators of the movie, the filmmakers themselves have been very quiet and mysterious about their interpretation of the ending. So it's really anybody's game, but I just, don't let me forget to tie it back to your reading of the characters. I love it, Lacey. Fantastic. Good work. Holy shit.
I was like so proud of myself as I was
it
like,
should be.
I was putting this together, because I didn't know if all of the sins were playing into a factor, but as the kid's like overeating, as the aunt's sitting there being lazy, as the kid's being angry, as the daughter's, you know, only caring about her boyfriend, I was like, okay, I got to piece the rest of it together. And it really did all come together as I was watching it. And so I was like, I'm so happy right now. My thoughts are working.
That is amazing. No, that is amazing, baby. And I will say this too about the family dynamic and stuff like that. You know, the grandmother, she's telling the animated story. What did you guys think of that real quick?
I love it.
How was that?
My goodness.
I thought that animation was fucking
original. It reminded me of Coraline a little bit.
Coraline, yep, for sure.
Oh,
for
nice.
Sure. One of the themes, though, in that, obviously, is, you know, the Krampus is coming after her and punishing her because she lost the Christmas spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I mean, I'm doing broad strokes here, obviously.
So basically Watson before he came on to cut to the chase?
Before, yes. Obviously. Yeah, before. But Watson has an arc here. And no, but I feel like one of the things, though, and it rings so true, and I think that that's what you need in movies like this, is to find relatable qualities and to really drive that whole, hey, the Christmas spirit thing home. You can't just say it. You got to show it. And, you know, when she says the line, Christmas was about sacrifice, you know, and then you start thinking about the commercialism aspect and stuff like that. And when you really break it down, it's like you just got to do something that shows, like, whether it's time, you can make it, you know, a gift or whatever. But I'll say this, that in the best way, my friends came through for me recently when I was making Lacey Lou's birthday mixtape. And Watson, the one that you did, like, you produced it. Like, there were people talking in the background. You were at a club. No, I'll be real, though. As funny and perfect as that was, like, I know you teared up. I teared up, I'll be honest with you, because I know that, like, if I really count on my friends and, like, they want to help me with something, and it's obviously for you, and, you know, you just come through in the biggest, baddest way, that's what it's all about. It's like, wow, forget a present. Watson spent time on that. You know, you always bring the heat regardless, so I'm sure it was easy for you, but, like, that was amazing, and that just meant so much to me. I know it meant a lot to her. And it was just amazing. So that's one of those instances where it comes through in real life.
Yeah, no, I think that the number one thing is, you know, when people just show up and, you know, show that you actually care or enough to do anything for somebody.
Yeah, so thank you for doing that, Watson.
Yeah,
you really
you.
Crushed that. And that truly meant a lot to me.
Oh, it was a blast. I was happy to do it. I was, oh, man, cool.
So and you made the nice list.
But that to me is a sacrifice. You know, you sacrificed your time and you want to do that. And that to me, you know, family, yes, that's what this movie's about. But, you know, in a lot of ways, it does extend to your friends. And it's like, it's all kind of the same.
Rhymed.
It's extend all extend to your friends. Yeah. But like, it's one of those things where I just think that this movie rings true. And one of those things that really makes a movie hit home with me is when it has real themes. And, you know, you can have gingerbread cookie men coming down the fucking chimney and all this fun stuff that we all love, you know, in horror movies as well. But I think that this movie has what a lot of Christmas movies try and do but lack, which is an actual message. And then you talk of that ending that we alluded to as well, and mm-hmm. then we can just go off on a fucking tangent.
Well, you know, one of the things that I really like about this movie is normally, like, I'm kind of like a gore hound. Like, I like bloodshed. I do.
Yep.
However, mm-hmm. in this one, there isn't a lot of that.
Right.
But it works for me. You want to know why?
Yeah.
Because Michael D. does not give a fuck about killing kids. Like, yes. The first death of the film is, you know, your supposed final girl is what you would think.
Right.
You yeah. know?
Yeah, what a swerve
that
was. I mean,
that is really what I thought was going to happen.
Right. Now, a quick question.
There was
now,
a bunch of little twists like
before
that.
Before they send her out, like, I'm not a parent. Mr. Watson, would you send Lil Watt down in a storm like that, a couple blocks?
To go find his little girlfriend?
Oh, yeah, you'll be all set. Yeah, you'll be fine.
I'd be like, all right, send me a picture of her. And then that would determine. I'd be like, ah, you can do better.
She's a blonde. Don't do it.
Yeah.
You guys are fucked.
That, but that automatically, though, that was such a bad decision to where when it came back to them, I had no sympathy to when they were like, what do you mean our fucking daughter, you know, didn't make it to her destination in a blizzard?
But you know what? I actually didn't have sympathy to the fact that she died.
No?
No.
It was a little snot the whole time. We didn't get to see her really – she cared for Max, but you don't really get to see her
really.
Open up too much, you know?
Right.
She's no, just, she lets the little bitches read his Santa letter. She's like – and she's like trying to hold him back as they're reading. She's like, now just stop.
Right.
And then like – I mean, obviously it's pushing, you know, his letter forward. And clearly, if he wasn't such a little snot-nosed brat, which obviously leads into wrath because – obviously, they could see that he cared about them in
right.
that moment mm-hmm. as, you know, they're reading it.
Yeah, that was a big scene.
So,
love that scene.
So, yeah. I mean, when he goes to destroy the letter, I don't think it was warranted anymore just because she read it aloud.
Right.
So that's why I believe he is Wrath.
Oh. I agree. I'll say.
So I'm going to keep going with my theme.
No, right. It definitely applies for sure. And no, I do love that scene too. And, you know, it's funny, it shows that, you know, they set up the family dynamic, and obviously those kids are little shitheads, but how that scene plays out, you know, obviously when he reads that out loud, or when she reads that out loud, it's a girl, right? It's so telling of all the characters and kind of, you know, really sets the stage for what's to come next. Because, like you said, too, in a lot of ways, when you first start watching this movie and you're watching the family dynamic, you know, I'm thinking of 1,000 movies that I've seen before. Mm-hmm. And I knew it was like a horror movie, obviously, and Krampus is coming and all these things. Krampus. But, yes, but at the same time, the first act is no way indicative of what this movie becomes in the middle and towards the end. And it becomes something, like I said, it's so – the setup is so – it's so different than what the second half of the movie mm-hmm. is that I feel, like I said, when I first watched it, it was off-putting. But the horror fan in me has come to really embrace it because, like you guys said before, it is. It's fucking dark as fuck. This movie, while it lacks blood, like you said, Lacey Lou,
yeah.
it is definitely up there in fucked upness.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. I mean, all right, so we're still somewhat talking about the family aspect or dynamic, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, obviously, you think that one side is, you know, the good guys and then the family that comes in after is the bad guys, right? However, I believe, for me, if I was a person, well, I mean, I am a person, but if I was in this family, I should say, I would not cook, I would not want to cook for these immigrants because obviously they don't appreciate it. So I believe Toni Collette's character is cooking these fancy, you know, bourgeois
creme brulee
dishes, you
that
know,
looked good, by
to kind of, you know, show, like, hey, I can do this. You can't. Kind
right.
of thing.
Absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
It, you know, and
you see that in a lot of families.
Yeah. It, but I mean, like, she's trying to be like, nah, I'm the good one kind of thing. And
right.
That is a vibe that, you know, you're kind of getting this from this family. But
right.
however, they're kind of a dick to their son as well. I mean, they don't stop the you know, the niece from reading the letter, you know, the kid is like, hey, I just want to watch Charlie Brown with everybody else.
Charlie Brown's an asshole.
And his dad is like, no, you can watch Charlie Brown by yourself. Like, clearly he doesn't want to do the traditional thing. Like, so I don't feel bad what happens to any of these family members.
Right.
Not one bit.
Absolutely.
Not even the grandma. And I'll tell you why later.
And I will say this, too. When that letter gets ripped up and that basically incites Krampus, right? That was like the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak.
Yeah, he broke the spirit of Christmas because he was the last one keeping hope alive.
Here's the thing, right? And it started with the grandmother, right? And his hope got crushed. I will say this, though, that I don't fucking blame him. You're right. All these people sucked, including his own family. Like you said, it's like nobody's even sticking up for the kids. So I think that the theme was this clearly a divide and between everybody, even between the main protagonists, like you said, right. Even between Adam Scott and Toni Collette. And yes, exactly. He represented the one hope left. And then, you know, that got crushed with it right there. And I just love, though, that theme, you know, to think of the whole family dynamic as kind of one thing. And for that to be broken and you know, for them to kind of break it down in a metaphorical sense, such as Krampus around Christmas time, man, it really kind of looks at Christmas and what it stands for in such a head-on way, in such a bold way, that I think that's what attributed to me not liking it at first. I didn't get it. It felt cold to me. But because I get it now, I can have that, you know, Watson, you talked about having that smile on your face earlier. I feel like I get it now, and it stands for so much more, and to me, it's metaphorical in so many different ways in real life.
Man, dude, well said. I want to build off what you're both doing right now, because I'm loving where this discussion's going, and I want to talk about that scene, Dan, that you mentioned where she is cooking in the Toni Collette's cooking, and then whatever her name is, the aunt comes in and is being a bitch, and then I want to tie that scene into what Lacey was saying about how and what you're both saying really about how these families are approaching Christmas the wrong way,
right.
And because what we have with Toni Collette and what she's doing is she's putting out this meal in this performative fashion that is meant to impress and meant to show them, like, okay, hey, this is like what we do.
Yep.
And, but the interesting thing there is a sincerity there really is, but it's mixed in with that poison of the performative Christmas presentation, right? And then when the aunt comes in just being completely unappreciative, nagging, definitely in their own way and in the power that they have in so far as what they know and how they act, coming in on the other side, not giving a damn about anything around and just coming in, sort of taking over and just being just a jerk. It's like, well, that's not Christmas either. You're both, but she does realize her wrong and goes, like kind of is like, oh, shoot, I guess I am. All right, I'll leave. Whoops.
Yeah.
There's self-awareness on both sides, but it's mixed in with the sins that Lacey's talking about, which is why Krampus needs to teach them a lesson.
Totally, man. I love that, Mr. Watson. And like you said, too, you know, when this family comes in and he is like the cousin Eddie and she's that obnoxious aunt or whatever, yeah, you have those scenes. So when it's so crazy, but when she's blowing that motherfucker away in the end with the shoddy, dude, that feels earned in some fucked up way.
It's like
what's that?
She locked up. She didn't make the shot that counts. Like, the grandma was like elves, and then she has the gun, and she's
Even get me on grandma. Like, we're gonna talk about grandma in a minute, but no,
okay.
I think that she was a badass, and we cheered for her in the end. I thought it was fucking hilarious. I thought
she has a moment. Yeah, she definitely gets her moment before. Is she the one who? How did she gets taken away?
By the elves.
Yes, okay. That's when that happened.
I mean,
did we just say that?
It's so stupid.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't like that aspect of it.
No? Okay.
No, because she's blowing people away.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like, the grandma obviously knows that elves are coming.
She knows way too much, and that's my biggest problem. She's way too quiet. she's way, like, okay.
In the subtitles.
You reach a certain, yeah, oh yeah, she doesn't even speak English when she clearly can, and she does at one point, when she's like, okay, this is the important exposition.
She doesn't even speak English, but she can.
Yeah, right, like, yeah, but exactly. She knows the exact words that she has to say to get across the narration and to further the plot. But no, she's a fucking bitch because she doesn't tell him about anything. And like you said, like, one of the simple things, elves. The fuck you mean elves, Grandma?
You didn't mention elves in your story.
What the fuck? Yeah, like, exactly. There were no elves in that story. And so clearly, you've done a couple Google searches, Grandmama. Ethel.
Or you've had Cranny visit you once or twice.
Yeah. So why didn't you tell us about the gingerbread men? Like, why didn't you tell us, Grandma? Like,
that is, yeah, I'm right there with you. Like, she above anybody should have known. Okay, listen, you guys don't understand how important it is we keep this fire going.
Why?
Okay?
It should have been her having more of a relationship with the grandma.
Are we getting into the grandma right now?
Yeah.
Do it?
Yes. Lay into her.
Oh, my fucking God. This is all her fault.
It is. That's what I'm saying. She sucks.
Yeah. No, I mean... Okay, so she's like, all right, I'm going to stand up for them, and I'm going to go after Krampus. Krampus just gives her, like, one look over and was like, I don't give a fuck about you.
Right.
And he just, like, puts her in the bag of,
it's
like...
It's not her story anymore, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
We'll get into that.
That's debatable.
Well, it's all their stories,
it's
really.
All this, right.
Well,
it's all
no,
their...
I don't...
The
family, I
think it's the family unit. I think that it can...
I have a theory, I think but I can't get into it yet.
I think it can start with one person and end with another, if that other person is, you know, Christmassy enough.
Well, had she not told the story, had she not, you know, been hopeless, like, maybe her family wouldn't have been. Like, so obviously she clearly lost a spirit as well.
Right. Well, and that's my whole problem.
Well, she's trying to keep it alive because she's the one that is trying to make him write the letter to Santa, if you don't remember.
Yeah, but she doesn't say shit in the movie.
No, but she's
not,
like, did you write your letter to Santa?
She's not even making Christmas cookies.
She should have guarded that letter with her goddamn life.
That's what I'm saying.
You'd think that a lot more people in Austria back when she was a little kid would have been having a pretty rough go of it and losing their Christmas spirit.
not the first person from Austria.
No, he's fine.
Well, obviously she came up pretty well in the world. I mean, look where she's living.
She was able to immigrate, get over to America and have, you know, whatever success or whatever her situation is these days, you know, definitely upper middle class or at least in that family unit. So, yeah, I'll take her place.
As we're picking this apart, it gets more ridiculous, but I love it.
Yes. Well, no, and I will say this, though, that it definitely was her fault. And, you know, I'll say this, too, though. She should have said fucking more about anything going on. You know, she was so non-complicit and just, oh, I'm in the background. Like, bitch, this is all your fault.
No.
Speak up, Grandma.
No, you know what I would have done?
What the fuck?
I would have, if I was her and that had happened to me as a child and, you know, Krampus left her to, you know, carry on the spirit.
Right.
I would have been telling this story way before now. Before it's happening again.
Before fucking the gingerbread men are coming down the chimney. Yeah.
Late, yeah.
Like, that makes no goddamn sense. Like, okay, so like, cool, I see a pattern. This is happening again. Like, no, you should have been, that's why I'm saying she should have guarded his letter with her fucking life.
Yep.
And made sure it got mailed to fucking whoever Santa is in that world.
I like how she was foreign and that kind of gave it this, like, oh, like, the origin is from elsewhere or whatever. Here's my problem with the character. They should have been more in depth with her where it alluded to the fact that she was trying to keep Christmas alive. Or she was trying to at least pass it down so the fucking kids could keep the traditions
alive.
But
instead, she was kind of condescending.
Yes, absolutely.
She could even play as... Pride.
When that kid was by himself opening his advent calendar,
you have to talk
shout
about
out to the advent calendar,
which
brings
has been
it
on
back
every episode
Scotty
well.
Crawford and his gremlins. I'll say this though, that's him. So it doesn't feel like, oh, Grandma's having an impression on him and she's really trying hard. It didn't feel like that at all. And that's one connection that I just feel like didn't work. They could have done that better and it would have made sense to the narrative, you know, and it would have made more sense as to – as to, you know, how hard these people actually fought for, I guess, the theme of the movie. It seemed like they were also blindsided that they heard, that they had no choice but to learn their lesson through fucking people dying when all we needed was a little exposition.
But you never actually see someone die, do you?
No, a lot of
they just get taken away.
Taken away by
hand grab.
By snow tremors, I like to call them.
By being pulled up through a chimney.
Snow tremors.
Yeah, I like the snow tremors, though. That's a
like
good
you
idea.
You never actually see anybody die in this movie.
No, you do see some shit, though.
No, but do you actually see somebody... well, aside from the dude that got, like, frostbit.
He was already dead, yes.
Like, do you think that was Krampus?
He gets eaten.
Oh, yeah, he does get eaten. That's
but really just taken. I don't think they were the kid
who
was chewed up or anything.
Up in the attic.
Yeah, up in the attic, but that weird worm snake thing. But I think it was just swallowed. So like kind of like Jonah and the big fish Bible story where it's just basically just being transported really out of there.
It's like Boba Fett in the Sarlacc pit. He's not dead. He just showed up on the Mandalorian, you silly fuck. But
spoiler
no.
alert.
Hey, you
Dan,
even...
so you're not, you know, neither of you, and I hadn't really thought very hard about the grandma character. I had just thought of her as, you know, the our way to get exposition. But you are right that there should have been more of a passing down of the knowledge. Like the girl and Max should have been like, oh gosh, here she goes again talking about this thing. What I guess I'm not defending it because I would have preferred what you're talking about. But I guess if I had to get in the heads of the filmmakers to say, okay, what are they thinking with this character besides exposition? Is there anything else? My only thing I can think of as a not very strong means of defense would be like, it's her secret that she never wanted to talk about and can't believe it's happening again.
Right.
I guess that's the only thing I can think of. Now, I would prefer it your way, but I'm just saying I think that that's probably what they were thinking when I think there are two or three writers on this with Doherty. That's probably what they were thinking.
I get it, I didn't pick up on that until like this view.
Me neither. I've never thought of that before at all. I just know she's there to give the exposition because she's foreign and from the same land where Krampus, the legend of Krampus comes from, that it's that sort of real world tie-in to the old world legend by
But I do have a more in-depth description of what happened to her and what happens at the end once we get there.
Okay.
Can't wait to hear it.
And I feel like, too, though, when they talk about the grandmother and, you know, in such a kind of casual way, like I said, I feel like, yes, they should have doubled down on it. But if they didn't...
It's all on black.
If they didn't double down on that, then, like Watson said, a more of a fluid way of the passing of the torch. If they were to even allude to the fact that she was keeping it alive, but this year, you know, a lot can change in a year in a family dynamic.
Like
a
COVID
lot.
Happens.
A lot of things can happen within a year's period. So maybe this was the one year that things started to slip and she started getting older and she stopped kind of caring about it. But it seems like that would be an extreme thing because when all the family gets together, it seems like those problems that they all had were kind of systemic. Yeah. So it seems like she wasn't exactly killing it up until, you know, this Christmas. Like, I can't imagine that grandma was making fucking Christmas cookies last Christmas. Like, I have a feeling she's been slipping for years. And that actually is tied into...
Well, she didn't even speak full English.
Exactly, except for when the most important part of them... And then she's like, all right, guys, I'm going to stop fucking around. This is grandma here. Listen up. Like, and honestly, though, here's the thing. This movie works on so many literal and metaphorical levels that a plot point like that and not having that connection doesn't take away anything at all.
No,
it's
sure.
Just, yeah,
I agree. Yeah. And I wonder if her mindset was maybe she was thinking to herself that she'd probably never have to deal with the Krampus thing again. Like it happened back then. And that's probably the last I'm ever going to see. I've been touched by this cosmic big entity. That's never going to happen again.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why it doesn't make sense for her not to carry on the tale.
No, for sure. I'm with that. I wonder how that could have been well written into the story. But saying the name Krampus too much, dropping too many hints, especially before we get that cool rooftop scene with the girl.
We were talking about that as we watched. I asked Dana, do you wish it was more in focus? Because it is a blizzard going on there. And he goes, no, I love this.
Oh. No. Keep him in the back, hopping from roof to roof, dude. Are you kidding me?
Can we talk about the sound of Krampus?
With all the jingles and the jangles. Like, it sounds like...
The Anti-Claws.
Christmas the evil. Yes, dude. Yes, it sounds so evil. That scene, like I said, atmosphere is so big in Doherty films, you know, and when I think Halloween, I can't not think of Trick or Treat. And with Christmas, man, with her in that blizzard, it's like The Descent. It's like, get him in the fucking, in those caves, and that's enough. You don't even need to add fucking monsters. So it set up everything perfectly with the blizzard and the storm. And then when you see Krampus far away, and it's almost like he's far away, and she screams and she starts running, that motherfucker hears her and he starts moving.
Love that scene, dude,
that was amazing. I thought that was so effective. And I gotta be honest with you, like, you know, obviously we watch a lot of horror, all of us, and that fucking is something out of a nightmare of mine. Like, that is something that you would find in a nightmare of Dan Chase. Running through a blizzard and this fucking beast of a thing. And you can't tell exactly what the fuck it is, but you can hear it. It's got bells on it. And fuck, can it move? And damn, that was like a nightmare. That was like, oh my God, this is like what a nightmare would be.
Well, and I think this brings it also back to the Seven Deadly Sins theme. Because I feel like Krampus is drawing them out, you know, with their sin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the boyfriend's not answering the phone.
Oh.
So, you know, she's lusting after him.
She goes to get some dick.
And then when the little kid who looks like the kid from Bad Santa and Trick or Treat.
Yes, he does.
He baits the kid with a gingerbread cookie.
Oh, my God. And he bites his fucking head.
You know, and then when the daughters, you know, they hear the cousin calling from the attic, they're like, I have a present for you. Which is greed going up the stairs.
Jeez,
and then prideful, he was like, I'm going to go after my daughters. I don't care. He goes outside. I mean, there's a lot of pride in this one, you know. But, yeah, I feel like each one of these things.
They all died by their own.
Yeah, by the sins.
Wow. Well done, Lazy Lou. Holy fantastic. Shit.
Damn.
Well, I'm sorry. That was just what I picked up on this view.
No, that's
an amazing takeaway too, because isn't the invert of that what Santa Claus does by, you know, appealing to our better natures, and Krampus is the very shadow of Santa Claus doing the opposite of that.
Exactly.
And it's very poetic. Well, great job.
And even if it isn't the seven deadly sins per se, that's what it kind of represents.
Yeah,
it's
all their flaws. Just what I took
right,
away.
No, totally.
And I don't know, like, Watson, I didn't listen to, you know, unfortunately. I'm going to go back after we, you know, record this.
That's one of my favorite reviews as well, Mr. Watson.
But I don't know if you covered this topic at all of what I'm talking about.
Mm-mm. No, sure didn't. That was only the second time I'd ever seen it when I had done that, and I definitely was – I was picking up on some other – I was kind of more on a Dickens, Charles Dickens sort of vibe and was focusing on that. And what you're focusing on is – I mean, it plays into that too, but it's getting deeper, and it's fantastic. And, you know, that scene with where she is having the chase and we finally get to see Krampus in – or, you know, and I – one of the things that is interesting to me is, you know, because you're talking about the dynamic of the grandmother, and I'm trying to think how they could have written her having knowledge of Krampus and even maybe their family sort of growing up in that tradition, and how they could have that, which I would love, but then be able to effectively unveil Krampus in that scene without us having heard about him all the time. They would have had to do some clever wordplay where they maybe don't say his name, or I think they could have done it. I would really like to see that version of the script.
They could have been so subtle to where you know, she could have asked somebody to hang the fucking star on the tree, and because they were fighting, they wouldn't. And then you see a look in her eye, and she's like, oh shit. Like, as subtle as that, they could have done. But here's the thing. Again, it doesn't take away from it, because here's the difference. You know, a lot of movies we nitpick, and it's like, okay, this is kind of, we're picking at the bare bones, because there's not much to this movie.
There's a lot to this movie.
There's so much richness to it that, like, stuff
I thought you
like,
meant not stuff to hate is what I meant. I thought you
absolutely
meant.
Absolutely. Yeah, and there's so much to it to where I think that Doherty's such a fucking smart filmmaker that he realizes that, you know, perception and character development
is key.
It's so key, and it can change in an instant. You know, all of these characters have an arc in a lot of ways, and a lot of these arcs are kind of, you know, you can pinpoint them to, like I said, just certain lines, certain looks, certain actions that they do, you know, how certain scenes play out. You know, when push came to shove, and Adam Scott wasn't a pussy, and that's, you know.
He's still a pussy. I actually have a question for you guys. Okay, so we're believed to, you know, this kind of coincides with the ending, but not at all at the same time. So they go out and they venture into, you know, the blizzard and whatnot, and they come across, you know, a gingerbread that has a knife on the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
So is it just happening to this family, or did it happen to, you know, other families as well?
Well, that's...
Do you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Like, is that just part of, like, what's going on in this atmosphere of this family, or is it really happening to other families as well? Because they're in somebody else's house, and a gingerbread has a knife.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. That does get into the ending. I'll say this while
was
kind
that
of
fake.
Oh no! Personally, I don't think it was at all. Here's the thing about this movie: it really does, in a lot of ways, take away all the Krampus stuff and all the craziness with the gingerbread men and the elves and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it feels like a Twilight Zone episode in a lot of ways, or, you know, something like that, because. Yes, when they do venture out and they go to that house and it's completely empty and stuff like that, it coincides with the ending like this. And here's what I love about movies like this. The ending can mean so much. And I know that's such a generic statement where it's like, you can take it however you want. But when you really break it down and you realize the implications of its vagueness and how many things it can pertain to, possibly, it's fucking amazing. And one of the things I think, personally, is, yes, it was real, but at the same time, like, each family kind of has their own, you know, history with the Krampus. So when we see those snow globes at the end, those are all the families. That's every family trying to keep or not keep. All the ones that failed, apparently, are in snow globes now. Good job.
Can I tell a story about a snow globe that has nothing to do with this film?
Please do.
Tell it.
Okay. Well, all right. So my sister... All right. This is kind of a sad story.
Uh-oh.
Aw.
My sister had this snow globe when she was a kid, and it was this... gold bear with gold confetti that played music, right? And it was her favorite fucking thing in the entire world. And apparently, I don't remember this happening, but apparently I was the one that broke it. Like, I don't know how I did it. Like, I didn't purposely, like, smash it or anything. I was, like, 3 when this happened.
Mm-hmm.
But she tells me this all the time. So from the time that I was able to, you know, buy gifts on my own, I have been in search for this specific, or at least close to, snow globe with this teddy bear with gold confetti, and I can't fucking find anything like that.
Oh, wow.
So for the past, you know, probably 25 years, I have been in search for this snow globe. I got her, like, I remember, like, I was, like, 10, and there was a snow globe at Walmart, and it was just like little houses. And so I bought that because it was the first snow globe, because that was probably around the time she told me the story.
Right.
You know, and so I bought it for that, and somehow that broke as well. I didn't break it. It broke in her backpack when she went to college.
Oh, no.
But so I've been in search for this fucking snow globe almost my entire life, you know, 25 years. So, yeah, and I can't find it. I don't know. I thought I would just bring that
up. Was it a brown teddy bear?
It was a gold teddy bear.
Gold.
Yeah, and wow. It had gold confetti in it, played music. And I literally have been looking every year, like, if you see me, like, when I'm searching for Christmas gifts, I'm like, yeah. Can't find it.
Still looking for that
yeah,
one?
I'm yeah, I'm still looking. Like, every wow. year I look. Every year.
I'm wow. looking right now.
Like, I just want to find this thing. Just give to my sister. Like, I love her so much. I think that would be, like, the ultimate grand gesture that I could do, because this thing obviously meant a lot to her, and I apparently broke it. I don't remember breaking it.
Right.
I don't. But I want to make it up to her.
You want, I'm sorry. You want to be redeemed. You want a redemption arc.
Yeah, apparently I broke it when I was 3, so yeah.
Oh, 3? Oh, geez. Okay.
But, so yeah, I've been looking for this thing for a very, very, very long time at this point.
Wow.
But, I mean, we're talking about snow globes, so I thought right. I'd bring that story up, because that's true, that's real life.
Yeah.
I have honestly, so if anybody, any listener out there knows of a gold teddy bear or a snow globe with gold confetti that plays music.
Yes.
Or if I have any artistic friends that makes this type of shit. Please get at me.
Yeah, indeed. Do it, folks. Help her. Help out. Help a girl out. Yeah.
A lot of the snuggle fucks make snow globes.
I haven't yet to meet one.
Now, yeah. Watson, what do you think? Do you think that when they travel out of the house into no man's land, are they still? Are they in their own world? Do other
their
people
reality?
Exist in, or do realities coexist with another?
I, you know, the way I've always thought about it, and I have never worded this before, so it's, I hope I'm not too clumsy in my execution of my thoughts here as I verbalize, but the way I guess I've always thought of it is that after that letter gets ripped up and they wake up the next day, power's out, and the snow is doing what it's doing, and the atmosphere has changed, and the movie starts, it goes from family, dysfunctional family comedy to, you know, Christmas movie to suddenly now we're stepping into the winter horror Christmas stuff right. with Krampus, is I think that they are in some sort of localized alternate universe
right.
where under Krampus's power, where
right.
he has total control there. And it does, it's not the whole Earth. It's probably limited to it's probably designed for them not to get very far.
Yes.
And they
I
don't
love it.
And it's completely under Krampus's control. It's not the real world. It's real for them. And it happened.
Right.
And, but because, you know, I've heard some people say it was all a dream in the end. And I'm there are
no.
so many better interpretations, and
totally.
That's the worst one. But I think it's a localized kind of temporary, like alternate universe that they are put in globe-like.
Yeah.
And I think that there are other people, expendable people, who were trapped in, or who are at least placed in that, hence the teddy bear, or the teddy bear, hence you got me, Lacey, hence the gingerbread man with the knife in it. I think there might have been other families pulled into their story,
like,
but then they're
weird,
quickly done
right,
away
to
with.
Think about?
It is, but the thing is, I'll bet you they're kind of like non-play, what are those called, NPCs.
Game
they're just,
players?
They're kind of, yeah, like non-playable characters where they're just like, you know, they're basically there to function as a terror mechanism for our main characters when they find out, whoa, like what's this? And if they find other dead people who are trapped in this localized
like a haunted house.
Well,
yeah.
I think that it raises a kind of an important question though.
Mm-hmm.
So if all these other families exist in all these other houses, and you know, even if they
little
are all
on the hillside,
even if the oh nice. If they are all kind of under, you know, Krampus's spell or whatever, can they interact with each other? Like,
no, they're already all dead.
They're already all dead.
Well, yeah, I mean, take for example the dude that was frostbit.
Right.
You know, so right. that's why I don't believe that it really did happen to other families.
Okay.
I think
no,
it just
oh.
foreshadowed what was to come.
Yeah, but here's the thing. So
with you.
Because I think it would invalidate the grandmother's history with Krampus if that were the case.
Well, I think
so,
the grandmother
so what
sucks,
is,
period.
Well, yeah, but does that imply, though, that every other family has an animated backstory with the Krampus?
I think it's the kid's dream. I really do. I think it's cool to, like, theorize that, you know, it is happening to other families. However, I think it is specific to the family. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I agree with that. I think the other families are, like I said, non-playable characters. They're probably just, like, replicants
it's
of
like
people even made by Krampus in where he has this godlike power within this small little universe. And so let's say their next door neighbor, they woke up that same morning in their own world, newspaper boy comes, throws the paper on, they're having their Christmas day. Meanwhile, there's a sort of an alternate mirror, I guess you're not mirror because it's not reverse, but a sort of duplicate or doppelganger or whatever, to use a more German style word to go to the theme here, of their house and of that mini reality, but only playable characters are the family who have to learn something.
I love it.
It's like a dollhouse.
So much.
Yeah, like a dollhouse. That's where my head has always been, and I've never voiced that before, but I love where you both are with that question, because it does. You have to ask that question because we feel it, you know?
Right.
We feel that this world is somehow separate, but how? And
right.
I love that. And so, yes, it is their story, and these others are doubles of the real people who are there. It's like taking out a slice of the reality.
Alive?
Yeah, and duplicating it there, and it's its own world that Krampus is the god over temporarily while they learn their lesson or they don't.
Well, and obviously, too, you know, it's like when they show up to the house and all these things are very apparent. Everything's frozen over, like, in such a ridiculous way that, yes, you feel like this is – we are no longer – in a normal reality, or if we are in a normal reality, this fucking section, this street, these couple of neighborhoods, it's taken over by the Krampus. But I do think, though, that is a main point to where, yeah, if every family was fucking, you know, taken over by Krampus, that would kind of cheapen the grandmother's story and her backstory.
Well, I feel like she's cheap, period.
Well, totally, but like...
I'm not a fan of the grandmother, if you cannot tell.
So, but if you did it to everybody, it would definitely take away and cheapen from that. And I'll be honest with you...
If I did it to everybody, it would take away and definitely cheapen?
You?
That's what you just said. I was just quoting you.
Oh, well, you're welcome, America. Cut it. Print it.
Send it to the internet.
Send it to the internet, as Johnny Lawrence would say. No, but listen, I think that this movie has so much depth to it. And I got to be honest with you, though, too. You know, a lot of the action scenes, a lot of these different, you know, whatever the fuck you want to call them, creatures or elves.
Can we talk about the creatures?
Or snow tremors. Yeah, let's do that.
Let's talk about the, you know, prosthetics or whatever it is. Because obviously some of them are in costume. Some of them are animatronic.
Yes, yes. Okay, I think
it cheesy? Did it work? What do you think about these creatures in this film, Watson?
Man, I loved sort of the homage to Full Moon with the animatronic creatures and whatnot. And I did like the sinister elves that are the evil mirror image of what Santa Claus has. Everything, the toys, you know, I think you said it earlier, you know, everything is in, you know, and I kind of confirmed it, you know, in, or not confirmed it, but rather agreed that these are shadows of the Santa Claus and what he brings and the cheer
the
and the joy,
right.
The Anti-Claus. And so in being that and in taking that role as Krampus and what he is, and he has to be that equal and opposite thing to make Santa Claus's whole shtick work. It's kind of interesting. And the fact also that was weird that we never actually get to see Krampus's face. He's wearing a mask.
Right.
And that's peculiar.
Absolutely. Oh, just... Okay, just the physicality, his form.
Oh, God, he's so intimidating.
He's so tall.
It's like, he's like a man, but he's a fucking animal.
He's like
you
Bigfoot.
Know, It reminded me of the things in The Village a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit, right? Okay. But
there's definitely a little bit of inspiration with the claw.
It was amazing. And look, those toys in the attic,
I'll fucking say this, dude.
Okay, so it reminded me of Adam Green's movie there. What was that Ray Weiss movie there?
Digging Up the Marrow?
Digging Up the Marrow.
Is it Marrow or Marrow?
Marrow. Marrow. Marrow? Marrow? Merrill.
You said
Merrill. Merrill, see? But anyway.
Merrill, sorry.
I don't know why I did that.
Love it.
One of the things, it's like, that movie is so ridiculous because, you know, obviously those things were derivative from a specific artist.
You said derivative, and now I'm wet.
Yeah?
I like it when he uses big words.
Me too.
That just threw me off.
Yeah, they're so believable, and they brought those motherfuckers to life in such a big bad way that in this movie, I'll be honest with you, much like that fucking scene when she's running through the goddamn blizzard, like to me that was nightmare shit. When that little baddie fucking thing comes and it's just real face.
I'm no longer wet, folks.
Okay, sorry. That was amazing. That scared the
living. Like, he even did hand gestures with
I
it.
I did.
Like, definitely.
You're welcome.
Gotcha. Okay, I can picture it.
I got up in there. Doubt you got nowhere.
It was like a golem scream.
Got nowhere.
You're right. I'm treading water now. No, I thought it was extremely effective. I thought all of them were very scary. Just add teeth to anything. Like,
well, they did.
I know.
Pretty much. They really did.
It was so good, though. Like, and that's so easy to fuck up. We've seen it fucked up in so many movies before. But, man, that fucking scene was so effective. And then they came back after, and we talked about, you know, what's her name with the shotgun and everything. And just the way that culminated was fucking amazing.
Well, they have, like, the gingerbread to where, you know, his head gets bitten off, and he goes, ah! And then a jack-in-the-box. Did you guys ever have a jack-in-the-box?
Never.
Never. Me either. Did those things actually exist?
The only
I've never actually seen one in real life.
Oh, I don't know, Rudolph. In Rudolph.
Can you do that one more time?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just a misfit toy. Is that Don Knotts that does the voice?
Don Knotts.
Is it? It might be. But
silver and gold.
Those aren't your cookies, bud.
Bumbles bounce. anyway.
Drop the red nose, Frankie.
Fucking Santa is a dick, though. We talked about that in Jeff. He's such a dick.
No, parents.
Everybody's
Watson,
a dick.
Watson, do you realize how big of a dick Santa is in Rudolph?
He's like, oh yeah.
It's basically, he's basically like, I'm going to snub you until I need you, motherfucker.
No, I'm going to snub you until I'm fat.
Yeah.
Because I'm thin right now, so I'm a mean girl, and then he gets fat, and he's like, oh, I need you to ride my sleigh.
Eat, Santa.
So, yeah.
Eat.
No, seriously, that's a thing.
I know.
So you're welcome for that.
He goes, Rudolph, get that nose, that ridiculous fucking nose, that beautiful nose. Like, I was like, fuck you,
I'm
dude.
Cool.
Yeah.
You know he called Rudolph's, like, an etard Ray behind his back all the time.
Exactly.
To speak a big Latin there.
He was a dick.
The movie, like, we watch it every year.
I just want to be a
dentist. We watch that movie and Frosty as we put up our Christmas tree with
Jefferson. Oh, nice.
Yes.
It's our tradition.
Absolutely.
But Rudolph just pisses me off, like, every time I watch
it.
Because I hate Santa. He's like, jingle, jangle, jingle, jangle, jingle, jingle, jingle,
jingle. You're a dick. You're absolutely.
Santa is a dick.
So is the kid in this when he says that Santa had to eat all his reindeer, including Rudolph. Because this fucking sleigh went down.
That's right.
What a little dickhead. I will say that. No, I thought that taking this approach to this movie was brilliant because here's the thing. We see hints of them. You know, we see the snow thing outside. We see the little gingerbread thing when he obviously bites his head off and then he gets pulled up the chimney. We see a lot of these things.
Well, you don't actually see his head get ripped off.
Exactly. No,
you just see his shoe drop.
It's like it's a building in a sense. And
I love that it's Toni Collette though that's like holding him.
Oh yes.
Like it's not his own parents.
Mm-hmm. Also, too, Watson. Did you notice the correlation between Toni Collette, this film, and Hereditary?
Yeah. Do you know the scene we're talking about?
In terms,
I don't think I do. Please explain.
The hanging.
Yeah, like she has she's being like pulled up.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
It was very reminiscent of Hereditary.
Absolutely. I will definitely key in on that when Skylar and I watch it for Christmas Eve.
Yeah, no. Yes. There's a where she's like lifted up and you know, that's wrapped around her neck and we're like Hereditary, but obviously Hereditary came after, but
yeah, 2018.
She didn't float in this one, so
no, thank God. don't be scaring me, Toni Collette.
Honestly though, I think that, you know, when they all culminated, when the elves and the fucking, you know, basically the Jack in the Box and every toy with teeth, when the gingerbread men, when the movie kind of takes that turn and it starts getting really crazy, I think that in a lot of ways, it levels up. And it only levels up because I feel like it's earned. You know, if that shit started, you know, even 15, 20 minutes into the movie, I would have been like, all right. Like, it would have automatically been put into a category. Most likely the same category as, like, a spoof movie or, like, a ridiculous horror comedy. And I don't think that, you know, I think that this movie teeters on that with the gingerbread men and some of the things.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I never feel like it really ever crosses that territory because it has such prominent themes. It has such dark themes. It has so much to say about it that I don't think it could be. And I hate to disrespect horror comedies when I say this, but I don't think it could ever be disrespected in that sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure does.
And also, I also feel like this too. All the scares, I feel like were extremely effective. I feel like
the what?
Well,
this movie's a horror comedy.
It's not. What do you mean effective? It's better than that. You gotta give it more than that. You have to. And here's what I'll say though. Everything is earned. It's earned because you're building characters. It's earned because, you know, you're not giving them just one thing. You know, it's not like a zombie movie where, hey, here's a different variation of a zombie. This zombie's been through the car wash, so he's like nice and clean and wet zombie. Like, there's different variations, but it's all really the same thing. What you have here is all Christmas-related stuff, but it's all just fucking, and it's very Christmas-themed.
Yes, this is very much a Christmas horror film, which I do like, a horror comedy, because I don't think it's horror.
Fine. Well, fine. You're sexy. I'll agree with you.
do you find it horror, Watson? Horror?
It's definitely in that it's a weird sort of mix of subgenres, but it is definitely that horror comedy family sort of thing that I think the PG-13 rating sort of reinforces that a bit. Not even sort of, it absolutely reinforces, you know, that, you know, sort of user-friendly aspect to it with enough scares to have teeth, but enough of the comedy so that way it's not hitting you too hard. You know, because like when the older aunt, but when the mom of the other family, David Koechner's wife, I think she gets, or is it the aunt, gets pulled out the window. You hear this, boom, you hear this, like, whoop, like this weird cartoon sound.
Yeah. Oh my God. Like, that is one of the greatest.
Oh, I laughed
at that too, but I think that's the intention. It's to go, because if they don't add that little silly sound effect, then suddenly it's a little bit too sinister for what this movie's trying to do, and they might have to get R rating.
I think it might have originally been darker.
It might have been.
It would have been. And those sound effects help.
It was definitely darker.
That fucking Looney Tunes sound effect, though, was so effective because it's not too much of it. You don't get that.
Did you just hear that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I feel like that they didn't go as dark as they did with Trick or Treat because this is a Christmas film.
Well,
and there's been so much controversy with Christmas horror.
Yes. And also,
that's why.
And I agree. And I agree too with the character too that Lacey Liu just alluded to, where the actress was in season one of Fargo. We just watched season one of Fargo, which it's funny because when I think of that season, it's kind of like the same tone as this movie in weird way. It's very dark. It's very like comedic. Have you seen it,
Watson?
I sure haven't, but that sounds fantastic.
Please watch the first episode. Please just watch the first episode.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then get back to us. Just watch one episode.
Guaranteed you'll be hooked. Yep. Billy Bob Thornton, Martin Freeman, Colin Hanks. Oh. The girl in
Better
this movie.
Bob
Odenkirk's in it. Key and Peele. Like, it's ridiculous.
Key and Peele's not in the first episode, but they do come later.
They come later, yes. I'll say this.
It's very cool. We recommend it.
There are certain pieces of art, certain movies that I feel like certain people just get. And that's not to exclude anyone and kind of say that they don't get it, but that's exactly what I'm saying. They don't get it. So there's a certain quality and there's a certain aspect to a lot of things where the subtlety works so well. You know, the themes, they just grow organically through the movie as they should. As, you know, mm-hmm. I feel like this movie really in a lot of ways sets a standard, you know, and not for anybody to come along and try and do the same thing, not to replicate it, mm-hmm. but to explore their themes more, to explore it all in depth. You know, as far as Christmas horror movies go, I gotta say there's a reason why it's not the 12 Days of Horror Chasemus. Like, mm-hmm. there's not that many good ones. They're few and far between. And I think that's because that's a very hard tone to get balanced.
Well, I think what I love so much about the 12 Days of Chasemus is that it's a variety of, you know, what people grew up with, what's relevant now. Horror, you know, I think there's little something for everybody in all of these episodes. And even if you don't want to listen to the movie reviews that we do, at least listen to, you know, the opening segments of our guests.
Amazing guests.
Because I guarantee you're going to relate in somehow or some way.
For sure.
Based off of, you know, the segments and the questions that we ask.
Right.
Those are the things that are going to hit home with a lot of people.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think that all the themes that we're getting into in this movie, too, like, that's why I wanted Watson on this episode, too. Because I just know that when I watch a movie, I'm like, Watson not only reviewed this, but I get excited, man. Like,
loves you to death.
I have no, I have no desire for you to like replicate anything. Actually, it's the opposite. You know, I like to get, like you said, like, you know, Dave Z's, you know, like get your latest opinion on this movie. You know,
absolutely.
I want the 2020 version of Watson. And I know it's a different obvious setup than your show was previously too. There's that different aspect. But I would never ask somebody to come on and do a show that they've already done. But at the same time, like, I'm a greedy little hoe and I just want it.
So this is such a different experience anyway, because I'm getting to learn from the two of you as well. And it's so cool to hear the different takes and us to all have a conversation about it. Because I had never given the grandmother really any thought except for the fact that she is, you know, needed for exposition and to have some tie to the Austrian lore. But you've brought up some excellent points about how that character maybe should have been handled. And I think that's fantastic. And Lacey's stuff with the deadly sins, I'm just like, I'm blown away by that. That's fantastic film critique right there. Folks, you're getting the pros here. You don't even need me.
Whole thing is, when I bring somebody on the episode or somebody comes on, my goal is to, at least if we don't have the same perspective going in, at least to see it from my side.
Absolutely. That's the whole goal of why we do what we do. There are some podcasters and film critics that I like them because I don't have anything in common with their ratings or their beliefs or anything that I like. There's a guy named Bill Shetty, and he is the podcaster. Dave and I have talked about this guy.
Bill Shetty, who used to have the Horror Network.
Yeah, exactly. Same Bill Shetty. And he was he's on Horror Movie Weekly, which is one of my favorite podcasts, with Jay of the Dead and Lady Phantom. And which is one of my favorite shows. You should check out Horror Movie Weekly. And anyways, I never agree with this guy, but he spells out what his view is. He says it clearly. He means what he says. And I believe, and Dave and I talk about this all the time, that like, even if, you know, you disagree, and like Lacey's saying, that if you can just say your piece and keep an open mind to go, you know, not have your arms crossed and be like, I don't want to hear any dissenting opinions. If you can keep your mind open and just be willing to listen, it makes the experience of film critique so much fun, and doing this podcasting stuff and reviewing and talking the underlying themes and these sorts of things. It's a real conversation that has nuance, that, you know, where even if we all have separate scores, you know, Lacey rates it a 2, I rate it a 5, Dan rates it a 50, and but we can all walk away at the end being high fiving and clinking glasses. That's what's up, and this is that's why I'm having this stupid smile on my face all night.
It's about the conversation, yeah. And about respecting each other's opinions and doing it in a way that a lot of people don't know how to do on social True. Media these days.
Well, and I'll say this Absolutely. Too, though. I think with this movie, that's not even the case. I think that we're all pretty much on the same page, you know? Yep, and I think there's a lot of things that we're all taking away from the movie, and they're all kind of...
Which is cool, though.
They're all different, mm-hmm. yeah.
No, I love that we all had a different take on it.
But here's the thing, though. And I thought about this as I'm watching the movie and as that last sequence starts.
Should we get into that, the
Can
climax?
We? Yeah. Let's,
yes, let's get into
it.
The climax.
Let's just do it, yeah. All right.
No, I'm just kidding. Oh, wrong climax.
Go ahead. Oh, wow. Good lord.
You're welcome, America.
I'm hitting pause again. But no, I'll say this, though. One of the main things that I love about this movie is, like I said, if anything can really, truly, like,
kind of
get under my skin, that can really make an impression.
Oh, you're going there.
Yeah. When the ending hits and we start that sequence where he wakes up, right? Everything, the how it's filmed, is very warm and fuzzy, right? Mm-hmm. Just obviously, it's
the
changed.
Scooby-Doo ending.
In a way, I'd almost get away with it if it wasn't for you.
You don't think it's a Scooby-Doo kind
of? Okay, here's what I think. I think that the way to start it. It already gave me, like, you know, like the end of Nightmare on Elm Street. It was shot the same way, very
Which one?
Fuzzy. The first one.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
Well, she took back her power. Don't get me into that.
Okay.
You know, I will go on a rant for that.
But the way that they go into it is in such a eerie, and I said Twilight Zone earlier, in a Twilight Zone-y way. That I knew no matter what the ending, I was like, all right, I'm going to dig this. I was like, I have no idea where it's going, but I like this. Because how everything unfolded at the end, and, you know, he's trying to barter with the Krampus, and then he just fucking laughs at him and drops him. Like, to me, that was hilarious, because he was just fucking with him the whole time. There was no hope for him ever, in my opinion. Mm. Like, the Krampus had his fucking mind set. But here's what I'll say about the ending, too, how that could change as well. And it changed for me about a million times thinking about this ending. But what it alludes to me, several things. I'll go through my first one. My first one thinking, all right, you got the point, right? Now you get to live Christmas over. You get to do it the right way. Everything's perfect or whatever. And then I'll see you next year. Now, that's my optimistic, that's Ooh. My PGG rating. Like, all right, fine. I spared you. You got to do it right. Okay, there you go. But I'm watching you. So being in my snow globe, you are now under my thumb. Don't you fucking dare lose the Christmas spirit again. Here's the thing. Do I really believe that in the real ending? No. I believe
oh,
it's
interesting. Okay.
So much darker than that, honestly. But I did that ending does cross my mind as a possibility. The second one is actually like a Groundhog's Day kind of resolution, to where when he woke up in that fuzzy snow globe, he's gonna forever wake up on Christmas Day in that snow globe. And I know that sounds fucking silly, but in a way, it kind of makes sense in the snow globe, in that, you know, in Krampus's fucked up world, Lacey Lou's face does not agree with this.
No, I'm listening to you.
You don't agree.
So I can have my rebuttal later.
Okay, absolutely. And I think it's one of those things where he's doomed to live Christmas over every day, and the Krampus will always be watching him in his snow globe.
Okay, Watson, what is your theory on the ending?
Okay, so when I watch this movie, I feel like it's channeling its inner Charles Dickens, and especially at the end. You know, we all know about A Christmas Carol by Dickens, right? And at the end, Scrooge McDuck, Ebenezer Scrooge is shown the error of his ways and put into a deathly scenario only to wake up with a new lease on life. And I'll bet you anything, Scrooge lived out the rest of his days wondering at every turn if the ghosts of Christmas, past, present, future, were watching him. Like, this is a man who has been touched by the supernatural and given a second chance to do things the right way. It's the ultimate Christmas tale about redemption and gratefulness. And that is something that I believe I at least got from the ending of Krampus. Like, yeah, and I do believe it has sinister undertones, though, when they realize that this wasn't a dream. We all experienced something, didn't we? And then the music plays. I want to like cheer and just weep joy when I see that, because I think it is a dark ending. And that they get a second chance, and it's possible. Some people would say, oh well, maybe they're trapped in their own personal hell of sorts that Krampus has made up for them. That's not
that
a bad interpretation. But yeah, that one betrays my ending, just because I believe, at least for me, the underlying theme that I get from it draws inspiration from A Christmas Carol's redemption message, especially if you think of their encounter with Krampus in this story as a failure due to their sins that Lacey brilliantly spelled out.
Right.
But since Max made that ultimate sacrifice that even Grandma didn't back in the day, he was able to get them, maybe Krampus, getting Krampus's good graces, to get the opportunity, get that second chance to get it right and hopefully work on those deadly sins this time around. But like I'm saying, it's not a totally happy ending, though, because they actually lived the events we see in the film. They went through all that shit. And even though, okay, you know, we're given another chance and we're pulled out of that little localized parallel universe that Krampus made, we're back in the real world now, like Scrooge, they have to live the rest of their days knowing that a powerful being, some godlike or demigodlike figure, etched his mark upon their lives and is watching them from here on out. Kind of like the seeing stones in Lord of the Rings that he can look at. It's his snow globe, like a camera on them. Imagine just trying to go about your ordinary life after that. You're grocery shopping. You go pick out your eggs. You're like, oh, shoot, I forgot to get Swiss cheese and apples. I got to get that. And then all of a sudden you're just like, a dark deity is absolutely watching me do this right now. Fuck. You know, you go get your car's oil changed and you're sitting there in the office or whatever. The most boring thing ever when you're getting your oil changed. It's the worst. And then it hits you. A literal demigod just fucked up my life and then gave it back. Is he watching now? And so I believe that, yes, there's a part of a positive to it, my interpretation anyway, but it comes at the cost of being like, wow, we're just in the shadow of something that we will never fully understand, something with power at a cosmic level. I got to get it right this time around. We got to purge those seven deadly sins. We need to do better. And if we don't, we know what's waiting for us. And that to me is pretty dark.
So it is similar to my first one.
It's pretty
one,
similar.
Then.
It's, yeah, yes. It's pretty similar.
Well, are you guys ready for Lacey to bring the fire?
Yes.
Because I think I'm about to flip the script here, guys.
Okay.
All right, and it stems back to the grandmother.
Yes.
Right, she told the story, and, you know, she gets the ball that says Krampus.
Right.
And I believe the quote is, what was the quote? So where she said, it was representative that hope is lost, when hope is lost,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that's supposed to, you know, revitalize. You know, the spirit of Christmas, that she can carry it on and bring the spirit of Christmas going forward, right? So when the little boy, you know, and a lot of death happened, like, right at once. Like, both moms get killed, like, or killed, I don't know, they sink into snow.
Wee!
You know, taken, they sink into snow.
Sucked away.
And then, you know,
ways.
It takes his bratty little cousin that, you know, read the letter. And, before that, actually, she gets sucked away and he's the last one left and he's standing against Krampus, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Krampus throws the ball at him like he did his grandmother. You've seen that earlier in the story.
Yes,
mm-hmm. The ball gets thrown at him. And I truly believe that was his out. This is, you know, this is where you get to make your new start fresh.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
I love it. That's what I completely agree.
Yeah.
But instead, this little kid had so much wrath and he had so much pride that I can fix things. He was so prideful and so angry that he could go fix things that he went down back to the depths of hell. And obviously he did not pay attention to, you know, his grandmother, because she got it wrong too. Like, she was not the wise all to be all that we thought she was, because
yeah, she got it she wrong
was like,
for sure.
She was like, I can fix this. And then, you know, Krampus
I'm not gonna say shit to my family about
Krampus does not like, you know, that kind of storyline. Right. He likes, hey, I'm giving you the out, you take it and you move forward.
Right.
Do not stand up to me. I don't like that shit.
Bitch.
Because I'm gonna put you in my Santa sack.
Don't you know I'm fucking Krampus?
Well, I mean, that's what he did. So obviously the grandson did not realize that, you know, that wasn't something Krampus liked. So he decides to go down after he's been given his gift of the ball to, you know, carry on without, you know, trying to pursue it further. But instead he goes down, and Krampus doesn't like self-sacrifice. It's too late for that. Like, it's all too late. Mm-hmm. And so he goes down. He's like, take me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they literally laugh at him.
They do.
They literally fucking laugh at him.
All of them.
And, I mean, obviously he does not like, Krampus does not like, you know, somebody standing up to him, because it's already too late. Like, if you were going to stand up for something, you should have done it before, you know, you wrote Santa's letter.
But don't you think, though, that contradicts the Krampus trying to give a lesson? And if that's so, then that makes it even more sinister,
because
he's just a sick fuck.
But the thing is that Krampus already spared him.
Right.
And he took that for granted.
Right.
And that's why Krampus is so pissed when he comes down. Like, well, Krampus isn't
I would have never thought of that. Would have never. I thought it was just he sacrificed himself,
so obviously he gets a second chance. Why else would they have this triple ending that we have going on?
Right. Good point, Lucy Liu.
I mean, he gave him the ball. He gave him the out.
Yeah.
The kid didn't take it.
He gave him the jingle ball.
He did. I want to push back a little on that, because I love where your head is on this.
Yeah.
I really like this. But I just want to push back that Max does give an apology for losing his spirit. And then Krampus basically throws him with what looks like hell, but it's a portal, I believe, out of that universe.
But it was
and
too
back
late.
To the real world.
He already gave him the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Krampus gave, you know, the grandmother the ball, and
right.
I think that's the point of the story. And she carried on, and until she stood up and took it for granted, that's when he put her in a sack.
She never made the sacrifice that he made. That's the key difference between Grandma and Max. Max
right.
made the sacrifice.
But it was too late.
Right, the grandma
sucks. I wonder if it is.
But I think once you receive the ball, it's too late.
So you're saying he took it as
he should have made the sacrifice earlier.
He took it as a disrespect that he wanted the sacrifice. Because
he didn't sacrifice until everything was gone.
Right.
Everything was lost.
Right.
He did not sacrifice anything until everything was lost.
I'll be honest with you.
He's like, I know you can bring them
back.
I'll
be honest with you. That, I think you're going super deep.
Am I going too deep?
You're definitely not wrong. I actually agree with that, but I had never thought of it. That's going super deep.
But yeah, that's what I do.
I like that. I guess I think what you're doing that I am not doing in my interpretation, which I like, by the way, this is not a slight to you at all. You're placing a significance on the ornament, the little bell bauble wrapped in the discarded letter.
Well, then why would he get that as a gift otherwise?
It's
a slap in the face. Like, you should have taken my gift.
Well, I think the gift is the slap in the face. It can be, or like a remind, not a slap in the face, but the bell bobble itself is like a remind, at least how I take it, a reminder of, okay, like this is your proof that I've touched your life. And then Max is a little, you attach a whole different significance to it, which I really like. I think that's going
right.
really deep, and that can color your interpretation for the ending, which it does, and gives you a really cool view, a really dark view. I don't attach the same same value to that ornament that you do. So, and that helps me get my Dickensian Charles Dickens ending that, you know, that is dark in its own way, but yours is. So then would you take this then after he's thrown into the portal? What do you think? Because I want to take this analogy and keep going with you. Where do you think they are at the end?
Okay, so obviously the ball is very representative.
They all have it at the end.
The ball represents hope.
Yes, it does.
In a sense, until all hope is lost. All hope is lost once you receive the ball. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. So I believe that all hope is lost because nobody else is there, the last one standing, and that's why he received the ball, right? It's too late for him to do anything once you receive the ball. He should have self-sacrificed prior to receiving the ball, and I think we would have had a different ending. I really do. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sure, but where do you think they are in the end when they're all looking at each other? And I believe, don't they all have ornaments?
Look at his.
No.
Oh, they all look at his?
He got
the ornaments. And that was Krampus's way of saying, hey, you should have accepted my ball the first time.
But see, even...
That's how I feel. Because then once he gets the ball, the family's looking at him like, fuck.
I got to be honest, I don't 100% agree with you, but I love it.
Yes.
I think that is a cool interpretation that I've never heard anybody say in
that
particular way.
It in
that's really cool.
Watch.
And
that
I don't
ending
think...
I take from it, but I really like that. That is cool.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's cool.
And that's why I don't think, though, that they're in the real world, because once they realize what's going on, and that just shows that whatever happened... Krampus has, what, a fucking memory loss spell that he worked on him temporarily?
No, they're in snow globe.
So, but think about that, though. That implies a lot. That implies that they are still in his world to a certain extent. They are still in that snow globe. So I don't think that they are back in the real world. I think that in some fucked up way that, you know, when they all realize it, it's like, well, why didn't they... remember it when they fucking woke up? Why was there no clear ending? Why
that's
did they
for
all...
us. That's
I don't,
for us,
I
Dan.
Don't think it was their story. I think it's specific to the kid.
Right.
He's the one who, you know, felt the wrath, that was angry, and then, you know, he did not take the offering when it was handed to him, and then apparently he feels like self-sacrifice is needed. Like, he's very superficial and very run-of-the-mill.
Man, okay. That is such an interesting and dark reading of this film.
Is it ridiculous, though?
No, I don't think it's ridiculous at all. And one of the things that they made clear in the commentary when I watched this was that they did not want to give away what they think, what the writers think the ending is or that it means. And I think that even if we all kind of have differing interpretations of the ending, which is so cool. And I think we can all agree that when they see the gift and, you know, it's a happy Christmas morning and it's all, oh yeah, it's happy. And then they all get that look on their face and the music plays. All of our interpretations can line up in the fact that that is some good dramatic timing of them sitting there going like, shit. And then the music plays, roll credits. It's
right.
It's cool.
I mean, and that's kind of what I get in with my theories. Like, am I going too deep with it? Like, because it all makes sense when I explain it.
Here's my point with critical thinking. And that's all. I think that's all I ever ask of myself when I review a film, when I'm listening to other people review, when I'm talking like this with people. If you can make a claim and then back it up with critical thinking that is in the text itself or the film itself, then you are doing, I think, what any artist wants consumers of their work to do, to dissect it, to check it out, and to be able to extrapolate whatever theme you can, as long as you can back it up. And you backed it up.
Necessarily co-sign to it, you appreciate it.
Only because, oh god, hell yeah, only because I attach a different significance to the bell bobble, but that doesn't mean I'm right. It just means that I'm looking, not looking for, I'm not trying to do confirmation bias here, but this is a very Dickens, or the stupid university word would be Dickensian, but a Dickens-like story, I hate that word. I also hate the word milk toast. Fuck that word. Anyway, milk toast, it's a basically way to say a lacking character or vigor. And Dan,
anytime
I said vigor.
Anybody says milk, I think nipples.
Hey, that's okay.
I was not breastfed as a child. I'm deprived.
Wow.
But yeah, you backed up your points. And I think we all have with critical thinking, and that's what you need to do when you're doing a book report or a movie review. You got to critically think. Like, I was on Exploding Heads and we did It Follows, and I launched into a big thing about how I don't think that movie is anti-sex or anti, you know, or like
it's
an
STD movie.
It's about a whole different thing about just something else. We don't need to get into that because it's a big freaking mic drop thing. We don't have time for that because we're in the process of three mic drops here.
That theory.
But yeah, I love what you said because you backed up all your points critically. You gave reasons why it is, and that's all you can ask. And gosh, I want to know so badly what Michael Dougherty himself thinks of his own ending.
Right. Yeah, I would love to know what he thinks of what I thought of his ending.
So here's yeah. one thing though about the broad sense of this.
Yeah,
filmmaker.
What do you think of this ending, Dan?
Okay, yeah, well, I appreciate it because I can tell when I watch a movie if it's being intentionally kind of ambiguous in mm-hmm. some senses. You know, in a lot of ways, it's like, okay.
Or pretentious?
This is pretty... No,
No, it's not pretentious. This film is not pretentious.
Listen, I think if you can construct a movie in a way where it can be interpreted many different ways, and like you said, Mr. Watson, that's one of my favorite things, man. I love ideas when I form them in my head, but just because... fuck. That's going to be a soundbite, huh?
I love ideas when I form them in my head.
Oh, yeah. But I wasn't done.
Dan Chase.
I wasn't done thinking. But I also love hearing other opinions because while I like my own thoughts, I'm not fucking married to them. I think that if somebody else can bring something to my attention, I love it just as equally.
Okay.
And I think that this is broad enough and ambiguous enough to where so many different things can be applied metaphorically and literally to not only the movie, but especially to the ending. And I think that there's so many different interpretations to the ending, and it's so nightmarish and eerie in so many ways and so effective.
Well,
that I think it being ambiguous, I think that when Dougherty said, I want to make this ambiguous and or whatever, I think that, yes, I'm curious to see what they think, mm-hmm. but I also know that they're smart enough filmmakers to know that they made this ambiguous on purpose.
Well, and what I'm curious is, obviously, me and Watson have two different perspectives of, you know, what transpired at the end there.
Yes.
So, I think I know where you're going to fall.
Uh-huh. I'm choosing between your opinions.
Yes.
Like I said,
Don't do it, Dan.
We know where he's going.
We already said this earlier.
Apparently, I'm just crazy, right?
Well, no, because when Watson said his, I said, so it's similar to mine. So, yes. I think that it's more of a situation where...
I think you're both wrong.
He did... It's not necessarily a G-rated version, but he is giving him another chance. He's keeping an eye on him in a sense, but... It's again.
Okay, do me a favor. Explain the ball.
What do you mean? Explain
the Krampus ball.
Okay, again, you can apply several different kind of. You can attribute either a lot to it or basically nothing. You could attribute it to the fact to where he could just be kind of passing of the torch type of thing. Like, hey. Now it's on you. Now you have to carry on the fucking Christmas tradition. It could be as simple as that. Or it could be as in-depth as what you said. I had never thought about it as in-depth as you had explained it. I love that, though.
Did I go too far?
No. I don't look at myself and say, oh, because I didn't think of that. Because, like, I'm kind of dumb sometimes. So, like, bringing into my attention, I'm appreciative. And it's definitely thought-provoking.
And now you'll watch it with a different perspective?
Without a doubt. Absolutely. And that's what makes it fun, too. Because guess what? Much like Watson, I think we should make this a Christmas tradition and watch it every Christmas Eve, too. You know, there's certain movies that just have that feel, dude. And this movie just has so much atmosphere, so much feels, so many different aspects that they bring to the table that so many movies are so lacking in, to where when we can find one that does it perfectly and exemplifies all the good things that I love in a movie. One of the main things being, you know, have thought-provoking material, which obviously has been, like, the subject of this whole episode, fuck yeah, give me that shit. I'll take it all day. You know, Doherty's proved himself. He did it with Halloween, and I love how you guys said it, too. It's like, it's not the same love as Halloween. It's something different, and when you explain that thing of his backstory, Mr. Watson, in terms of how he kind of approached it, I love it, because I feel like we all kind of, you know, and when I say we all, everybody sitting here, I feel like we all kind of feel the same way, because we do love Halloween so much that, going into Christmas is a different thing.
Actually, I kind of want to tell one more story before we get into our final rating.
Please do, baby.
We went to Halloween Spirit.
We did.
Do you know where I'm going with this?
I'm so sad. I hope you guys had fun, but I guess we'll find out.
Yes, I love it. And my thing is, I have to get, you know, a blanket, because they come out with blankets every year that's different from the year before. And the coolest one, aside from Beetlejuice, which I didn't get because I feel like the blanket that I got was way cooler, spoke to me, which was a Krampus blanket.
Unbelievable.
And, I mean, it was, you know, one of the movie poster arts on it, and, you know, it has Krampus's finger and then touching the snow globe.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is, and it was black, and...
Because a lot of that stuff, you know, it's funny, you go into those stores, but a lot of that stuff you see year after year, but Lacey Lou is correct, like, they do have, like, new blankets, and...
Every year.
That's, like, my favorite blanket now.
Yeah, and just the design of it, I was like, so I have to have this, because the ending, like, aside from this watch, the ending resonates with me, you know, because it brings a great point. Like, you're trapped or you're not.
Yeah.
And, but I just loved this blanket, and I loved what it represented. And I didn't care if I got it from the Halloween Spirit store. So, I mean, we also bought
We got our Sanderson Museum of Witchcraft from Salem, Massachusetts, established in 1893. Yeah, from Hocus Pocus
sign. As well, and we got Mr. Robot mask. We got a Friday the 13th magnet for our fridge. And we got these little things that you open with Michael Myers, different artifacts in them.
That was so much fun. Yeah, we did a live video of that. That was so much fun. It was like a Easter egg thing, and you open them up, and
the only
thing Haddonfield Memorial.
But the only thing that was, we did a live video of when we opened. You know what was in them.
Amazing.
But okay, so I think we should get into our final rating.
Let's do it. How about you, Mr. Watson? You ready to make this?
Did you change your mind about anything on this podcast tonight?
Yes, I had actually examined the character of the grandmother and seen room where there could have been some improvement in the script regarding how she acknowledges her prior tragedy.
Doesn't acknowledge it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is, and you know, this movie isn't perfect, and I never have thought it was, even though it is it is my favorite Christmas horror movie.
Yes.
And do you rate out of 5?
Yeah,
the show still, like, as I said, this is my favorite Christmas horror movie, Watson holiday tradition. And what's funny is that it's crazy to me that the two of you didn't know that when you invited me on to do this day of Chasemas. And, you know, I feel bad for my buddy Dave Z for having to go through Black Christmas 2019, but it seems I lucked out here. Sorry, buddy.
The two other films as well.
Yeah.
Okay, well, good. Because I actually like the other two. But, we gave him
Fuck, Marry, Kill for the Black Christmas 2019.
I can't wait.
Actually, should we give him the same? All right, so there's a lot of hot chicks in Black Christmas.
2006, marrying 74, killing
2019.
We're talking
2006 alone.
Yeah, we're talking.
You know how many hot chicks are in that movie, Watson?
Across the board,
it's been a while, but I Michelle Trachtenberg, the effing Mary. You get two of them.
You know what? Actually, that was Dave Z wanted to. I can't remember if he wanted to fuck or marry her.
Oh, he wanted to do everything.
Which was very surprising because he killed
Katie Cassidy.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And he excluded Mary Elizabeth Winstead altogether because he didn't. Because
I
her
replaced
to die.
Her with Lacey Chabert.
He could replace her.
Oh, okay. Okay. Hold on a second. That's right. You're bringing some stuff up. I suppose. Oh, you know what? This is so okay. I'm going to marry Michelle Trachtenberg because I want to spend time with that young lady. Lacey Chabert will be the fling, and then we'll kill. Who was annoying? Who was annoying?
We gave Michelle Trachtenberg, Lacey Chabert, and Candy Cassidy.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll go there. We'll go there with it. Yeah.
So you're killing Candy Cassidy as well?
Wow.
I guess so. I could kill Mary Elizabeth
Winstead.
Well,
that was not his original
because...
question. We just gave that to be nice.
No,
but the
I love
original
it.
Question, Watson.
Ask it.
Was Mrs. Mack?
Ooh.
Agnes. And
Billy's mother.
Well, marrying Billy's mother, that's for damn sure.
Why is that? I'm going to see if it coincides with Dave Z's answer.
Oh, okay. And of course, we'll all, have a fling with the old Barbara, Ms., you know, that B.O.B. song? Ms. Mary Mac, all dressed in black.
Yeah. Black.
Love that song.
Set.
Yeah. So we'll have a fling with Ms. Mack and then kill whatever the third option was.
Kill that thing. Yes.
Kill that thing.
Billy's mother.
No. Yes.
All right. So let's get into our rating.
Yeah, rating. So yeah. Anyways, yeah. Like I said before, first watch of Krampus 2015. There were things I didn't like. The humor passed me by. The gingerbread men annoyed me. But that second view, my heart just warmed up to the spirit of what it was trying to do. And even though it's not a perfect film, and we have gone over the imperfections, this has become an absolute modern classic in my eyes. Yes. And I am in that, and I have changed my mind, just opened my mind to the various endings. I love my Dickens ending, and I do think it has more sinister undertones than some people who would think it's a purely happy ending, because I don't think it's happy. It's bittersweet.
It's not.
But the ending you put forth, Lacey, is critically thought out, well worded. I really like it, and I'm going to try to watch the film with that in my head. Even if I keep my Dickens ending, it's fun to just try on a new hat.
Keep your Dickens.
Have some fun.
So right, keep your Dickens, your pants.
So no, I guess I'll go. I'm just going to go out a 5 out of 5. Ooh. And if I were doing this out of 10, it'd be in the 9.5 to 10 range, yes. right up there. Not quite perfect, but damn close. Yes. I get a wealth of emotion from that final scene. And then when Adam Scott's character dies, when he closes his eyes and accepts his fate, I get really emotional at that scene. And I'm not an emotional person. I'm really not. And it's just something about like the way, you know, he accepts his fate. And it's just like, I don't know about you two, but I'm decades past the days when I identify as the teen lead in the movie. I'm not the kid. Right. I'm the handsome young dad.
Yeah,
who's,
we're like mid-30s at this
point. Yeah,
I know. I'm the handsome young dad who's badass, drinks whiskey straight out the bottle, blasts punk rock, and I'm espousing good moral behavior because I'm also a good guy. But then that's me dying in that movie right there. And if I'm being honest, it reflects my inability to protect my son from these ungodly forces, and it makes me sad, Dan and Lazy. So anyways, yes, 5 out of 5, but if it's a scale out of 10, we're in that high pocket of 9.5 to 10. What about
you? Nice. Dude, I couldn't fucking agree more. I give it 5 snowmen in your front yard. You know, one of those movies where it's so rich in ambiance, in mood, in feeling, in atmosphere. I agreed with Watson. This is a fucking 5. I give it 5 snowmen on your fucking front lawn. I think it's an amazing movie. It's got ambience. It's got atmosphere. And so many movies fail to capture that. And I think that this movie does it not only, you know, to the umpteenth degree, but they also add in characters that have their own arcs. They also add in that horror element, which we talked about, which is completely dark, which is perfectly ambiguous at the end. Which, you know, you see some of the best, I guess, creatures, if you will, in this movie, whether it be the fucking snow tremors, whether it be the elves or the gingerbread man.
And I love that you say snow tremors.
Yeah, the snow tremors. And and Mike Watson said, you know, it's funny at first. You're laughing at the gingerbread men. And I was getting serious Evil Dead 2 vibes at one point. Ooh. When I watched the first time. But, you know, over time, I've realized that, you know, because it excels in so many aspects and it far exceeds so many movies that try and capture the Christmas spirit, I would rate it the same, a 5. I'm in that 9.5 range with Watson as well, where I see why he would deduct the 0.5. I don't think it's a perfect film. I just think that those things that are great about the film are so strong that it masks those other things and it can boost up the score to a 5. So, 5.
Well said.
Yep.
Wow.
How about you, Lacey?
Well, you said two snowmen.
Yes.
And they symbolize 88 because they're shaped like the number is 8. And that means you get 8 out twice. So I like that. Anyways. Sorry. Okay. I'm a little perverted from time to time. I haven't been in a while, so I think it's a fresh change of pace.
You will the beast. No complaints the beast. From me.
No, I've gotten something different every time I've watched this film, which I think is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
The first time, I didn't like it. I just wasn't in the right mind space to enjoy it. The second time, I immersed myself into it. This time, I looked at it from an analytical point.
Critical.
Because we're doing it for a podcast.
Yep.
And I came up with a lot, in my opinion. And I think that not only is Watson going to watch it with the opinions that I brought up coming forward, I think our listeners are going to as well.
What about me?
Well, I don't even know if you paid attention to what I was saying.
Oh, I didn't.
He's like, oh.
He never does.
Something about wrath or whatever.
What? Do you want to go to lust right now?
I'm about to.
Turn on the camera.
No, had you agreed with me, you would have absolutely gotten that. But you can go fuck yourself from here.
You're about
on
to get the wrath right
You
quick.
Can 88 snowball your dick.
Wow, whatever that means. I'm down. I'm always down for new things.
No, but the point of these podcasts, sometimes, you know, it's not every time you get a movie that you can think analytically, though. They're far and few between.
We didn't go that in depth with nudie on Christmas Vacation, did we?
No, I mean, there are just some movies that, you know, you can go more and everybody gets a different experience with.
Right, right.
And this is one of those films.
Absolutely.
And, you know, as somebody said, it was either you or Watson, obviously, that the filmmaker's intention was to not allude to actually what their theory was.
Totally.
And I think that's cool.
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
I would love to make a film someday that, you know, makes people think.
Right.
My favorite, aside from Scream, my favorite film is Donnie Darko. And every time I watch that film, I see something different.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And I think that's what makes an amazing film. You think about it differently.
Hey, Mr. Watson, and she just interviewed Frank the Bunny from.
I did. James Duvall.
Yes, dude. He was one of the coolest dudes ever.
I just showed that movie to my son, and he was over the moon.
You love it?
Wow.
This is one of those kind of films that makes you think every time you watch it.
Yep.
And I didn't really pick up on that, you know, the first time or even necessarily the second time.
Right.
I think when I watch it the fourth time, I'm probably going to get something different.
Probably.
Which is cool.
Yep. Awesome.
That's fucking cool.
Love it.
That's what I love.
Effective.
That's what I love about Donnie Darko. And this could easily, like maybe 2 or 3 more watches.
Yep.
This could easily creep into my top 15 of all time.
Right.
Cool.
And that's just because there's so many things and different variations of how you can take things.
Right.
That's what I love about Donnie Darko.
Yep.
And that's what I was picking up on this view.
Absolutely.
I have to give it a 5 as well.
Nice.
Wow. Oh, cool. 5s across the board. I just want to say that I have had such a fantastic time tonight with this review and this discussion because it is – I think that this – what everybody's hearing right now, I think this is the review to beat. This is fantastic. The level of discussion we've had here and the diverse – opinions and interpretations and the critical thinking happening is very just so much more impressive than I think other, I'm not trying to look down on anybody, but just other, I've heard other reviews that, you know, have been fun and cool, but never really talked like this. And Lacey, you bring in the seven deadly sins and just, I mean, and your interpretation, you know, meet with the Dickens and, you know, it's, this has just been a blast. And I want to thank you very much for inviting me to talk this movie specifically, because this has been a rich conversation. Thank you.
Well, Watson, anytime you bring the Dickens.
Ah! Give her the D.
Bring the Dickens, Watson. The Dickens.
No, thank you so much. And thank you for at least entertaining my stupid thoughts as I go on.
Hey, well, listen, I've said it since day one. Since Watson got on the scene, he's been the fucking guy to beat. You want to talk about the review to beat? He is the ultimate podcaster. He's not only smart, witty, he's not
cunning.
Only thorough in all.
Can you
all
say cunning?
Cunning.
Oh, my God.
Cunning linguist.
He's all of those
Palacio?
Things. He's all of those things and then some. But I think more importantly than anything, and this is why it was important for him to come on the 12 Days
to
of Christmas, is the fact is the fact that he is a true friend. You know, mm-hmm. We have been friends for quite a long time now, sir. Yep. And I not only love our conversations, but I truly feel like you're one of my favorite fucking human beings. So obviously it made sense to have you on this episode. And obviously it makes sense to have you on future episodes, which
100%.
I look forward to as well.
Yep. Definitely. Absolutely. I can't wait.
Uh-huh. All right, you little ho, ho, ho. It's that time of the show to promote your stuff, Mr. Watson. You alluded to it earlier. What do you got coming up, my friend? Pimp your shit.
Okay. Thank you. I host a podcast with one of my best buddies, Dave Z of Skeleton Crew, Banana Laser, ABC's A Hidden Horror, and Exploding Heads fame. I'm the Watts. He's the Z, and together we run the Watts Z Party Horror Show. It's a three-act podcast that releases monthly, and here's what we offer if you are so inclined to check us out. Yes. In Act 1 of the show, we go over the month's horror movie releases, what's coming up, or what you may have already missed. In Act 2, we tackle a horror-related topic of discussion, and then in Act 3, we conduct an in-depth review of a horror film of our choosing. We're everywhere podcasts can be heard, so get on the podcatching app of your choice. Type in W-A-T-Z-E-E and you'll find us. We're the only thing that'll come up. Don't be a peasant and ignore what I'm saying either, motherfuckers. Be high class and subscribe.
Hey,
so
that's you can, fucking Bedouins.
Hey, Watson, can you give the listeners some of the movies that you've covered on your podcast?
Ooh, okay, absolutely. We have covered, some of my favorite ones were, like, we did an in-depth review of The Cabin in the Woods. And then we've done Suspiria 2018, The Neon Demon, We Are Still Here, The Girl Next Door.
Did The Loved Ones?
We did The Loved Ones, yes. Yeah. Home Movie.
That's
we've
my
done
favorite.
The Poughkeepsie Tapes.
Oh, and, I love that episode.
Yeah. And
what did you know?
That episode
that
was
the
so
freakiest. Okay, so last year we did, what was our, Thrills and Chills. For Cut to the Chase, that was the scariest movie I watched in 2019.
Yeah, which one?
I can't even say it. The Poughkeepsie Tapes.
Yep. I would have heard that episode. That makes sense. That is such a creepy movie, and I'm very happy with every review we've done. We've also, I'm really happy with the level of just. It's like tonight. We keep it. You know, a little, we go a little, our reviews are not this long, but they are in depth. We keep it kind of succinct and do a spoiler free review. Then we do our outro stuff, select the next movie, and then we have an after party. And then that's where spoilers can go. And that's when things can get lengthy and we can talk like we're doing here tonight. Cause I know you guys, we do spoilers on A Cut to the Motherfucking Chase. So, you know, that's just what you go in knowing. And so ours, we try to balance it. It's a lot of fun. I'm just proud because I come from the solo cast realm with, you know, my old show, Horror Corridor. So it was really cool getting to mix it up with somebody as a host rather than as a guest, which it's so fun. And it's so fun to do this and be able to meet people like you and get in this community. That's why I started podcasting, was to meet cool people. And I've accomplished my goals. So it's rad just to be here with you two. So
for everybody that has been a part of this episode, and we all love you, and we're coming very close to the end of 12 Days of Chasemas.
Yes.
We hope that you are all celebrating with your families and holding them dear, because this is a very trying time for everybody.
Yes.
And, you know, we're sending our love from us to yours.
And we hope your ham isn't dry.
And that you may have non-animatronic gingerbread cookies.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And Mr. Watson, Merry Christmas, sir. Dude, thank you so
Merry
much.
Merry Christmas to you.
Brother. We got
thank
nothing
you.
But love for you. And hopefully we will see you again soon on Cut to the Chase. So for everybody here, all you snuggle fucks.
That's been a part of this one.
Peace out.
Anytime down. Watson whistle.
Yes!
A nasty trap and wait. When he comes a snipping, we will snap the trap and close the gate.
Wait, I've got a better plan. I'll catch this big red lobster man. Let's pop him in a boiling pot. And when he's done, we'll butter him up. Sure to get his kick.
Turn down your bloody nose.